He was wearing his yellow tie. I didn't even wear a tie to work anymore.
The first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club?
I'm half asleep again. I must have left the original in the copy machine.
Is this yours?
Huh?
Pretend you're me. You find this. What would you do?
Well, I gotta tell you, I'd be very, very careful who you talk to about that. Because the person who wrote that is dangerous. And this button-down Oxford cloth psycho might just snap and then stalk from office to office with an Armalite AR-10 carbine gas-powered semi-automatic weapon, pumping round after round in the colleagues and co-workers. This might be someone you've known for years. Someone very, very close to you. Tyler's words coming out of my mouth. And I used to be such a nice guy. Well, maybe you just shouldn't bring me every little piece of trash you happen to pick up. Compliance and liability.
And now, coming to you from the CD Game Exchange Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
It's so true. Why, hello. It's 3 minutes and 28 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of July in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming by and making it part of your listening day. It was either that or the Hooper X opening speech from the beginning of Chasing Amy. I might do that tomorrow, but I'm not entirely sure. It is the Rick Emerson Show, live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Home of the, I've just blown it. What is the name of the blues festival? The Waterfront Blues Festival?
I've never been to one.
You know, that thing with all the white people. Where they sell snow cones. Nothing says the blues like a snow cone.
They have any rides?
I got the blues so bad. The line for the Tilt-A-Whirl is so long. All right. I have nowhere to park my Lexus. I cannot find my favorite pair of khakis. I'm sorry.
I should be a team player.
Why, hello, it's the Rick. So hard sometimes. Sorry, I'm falling in to get a hold of myself. Why, hello. What was I saying? Something, blah, blah, blah. Here we are, beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, a proud part of the CBS radio family. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. If you'd like to join us today, it is Thursday, July 5th. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970 for your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your 2 cents, your what have you. You can also email us if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. If you want to reach us in a binary fashion via the interwebs, it is rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email the rest of the cast and crew, sarah@970.am. Sarah with an H, by the way. Tim@970.am or scaryj@970.am. And again, our phone number today is 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. So thank you so much for coming by, 503-733-2970. It's Thursday, we're here, we're live.
Clackamas County Sheriff's...
Hi, hello. Is that me?
That's you.
I didn't do anything. I'm just... here we go. Oh, this is... Kristen sent me the story from K2. Doesn't want to pause. All right. When did K2 hire this guy that looks so much like Sean Hannity? All right. Well, whatever. Apparently, they closed some sort of... Apparently, 6,000 people...
Oh, that's the Clackamas.
Is that Clark? Yeah. The Clackamas.
The Clackamas.
It was in the Clackamas.
Barton, any riot.
Barton Park and Carver Park, mm-hmm. Where police say 6,000 people had gathered. What could get 6,000 people in Clackamas to agree on anything? Why? For what possible reason would 6,000 people in Clackamas be gathering? Is there some sort of firework exhibition happening? Apparently, I haven't listened to the story all the way through, but apparently in this K2 story about Clackamas, the sheriff actually describes all the people who are gathered there as, I'm quoting now, as hooligans. So we'll play that later. All right. You see, in Philadelphia, they just turned off the entire fireworks display and sent everybody home and then did it later when no one was there?
That's the way they do it in L.A.
Really?
They don't do let it you at 5 practice. O'clock in the morning on the beach in Santa Monica.
When no one can go.
Right.
Let's just put this. Let's have the fireworks display just take place in a gated community. Mm-hmm. Just skip the middleman. Oh, man. I didn't even see. Well, we're skipping ahead here. I haven't even done introductions. I didn't even see the fireworks last night. I meant to, and then I just couldn't get off the couch. You know how it goes. All right, here's what's coming up today. It is Thursday, July 5th. Lisa Goddard's going to join us from Washington, D.C., where I think they evacuated the National Mall yesterday. The inclement weather, as they say. It does seem to be strange, actually. A lot of parks and cities being evicted and evacuated right before the fireworks last night. Steve Kastenbaum's going to join us. He'll talk again, but maybe he's calmed down enough to talk about this Joey Chestnut guy. Scott Antonio, right now, Joey Chestnut, New World eating, hot dog eating champion guy, if he comes to town, we totally got to get him. I'm telling you right now, you should talk to Steve Kastenbaum today when he calls in, Scotty. When Steve Kastenbaum calls in today from New York City about Joey Chestnut, New World hot dog eating champion, pump him for information on Joey Chestnut. See if he's got, I sound like I'm in a mob film. I want you to pump him for information on Joey Chestnut and Three Fingers Brown. Vinny the Legs. Ask him if he knows how to get a hold of it, because if he's going on tour, apparently he's going on some sort of exhibition tour where he's going to be eating things in various cities. What a strange country we live in. Joey Chestnut will be coming and eating things in your town soon. Look for announcements. He was positively gibbering with excitement last night. So we'll see if he can talk about it today. And then he's talking about 777. He's talking about the luckiest day of the century, blah, blah, blah. Because apparently idiots across the country are getting married on the 7th and doing whatever. And you know there's probably some lottery thing involved with that, too. There's probably some special Powerball something or other happening. Doesn't matter to me. I don't pay it, no, never mind, as long as we got vanilla ice. That's what that's all about.
I went to Safeway this morning and my total was 777.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did it freak you out a little bit?
No, the guy's like, ooh, it's a lucky day.
You know what I hate? Here's what I never need. Speaking of things I never need to hear again at the supermarket, you know what I never need to hear again? Why am I always behind this guy? Why am I always behind the guy at the supermarket who, when the pork checker tries to scan some item and it won't come up, what does the guy in front of me always say? Well, I guess it's free then. I always hope the checker just stabs him right in the throat with something. I would be an alibi for that checker any day of the year. Lisa Goddard, Steve Kastenbaum, Jim Roop is going to be joining us. I don't even really remember why now. It seemed interesting. Al Gore's son got busted with a trunk full of drugs. Uh-huh. And Al Gore had to cancel. He had to cancel all of his interviews for that retarded concert that he's doing. That I didn't even know was this weekend. You talk about a concert that has zero, I mean, that's tracking at zero buzz right now.
Oh, you watch your own music channel. You watch VH1 Classic. That's why.
VH1 Gray Hair. I'd like to watch VH1 Clinging to My Adolescence. Maybe if I was watching one of those godless foreign channels.
Much Music.
Well, Much Music. Now, I don't think it's called Much Music. I think Fuse. I think the Fuse channel is what used to be called Much Music. Does Much Music even exist anymore? Now, I don't even know.
I think Much Music, isn't that in Canada?
Yeah, but I think that's Fuse. I think Fuse is what used to be called Much Music. I think they rebranded it. Doesn't really matter. I guess if you're in Britain, you might care about this. I don't even know where the concert is taking place. Is the Al Gore thing more than one? Is it like Live Aid?
It's all over the place.
Where Phil Collins is going to fly from continent to continent playing everywhere?
I'm not sure Phil Collins is involved.
Probably not. I wonder what Phil Collins is doing right now. It's like I used to have that little Java applet on my... I had a Firefox extension that would show me in the bottom of the screen at any given moment whether Abe Vigoda was still alive or not. I want to have one of those, but it just tells me at any given moment what Phil Collins is doing. So I can press a button, and like a little camera will come up. And it'll be, what is Phil Collins doing right now? Anyway, so Jim Roop's going to join us about Al Gore, who's had a bad week. 100 miles an hour. Trunk full of Xanax. That's fantastic. It's impressive that he would even be going 100 miles an hour since he was apparently out of his mind on downers. So there's that. We'll ask the musical question, what is the worst band name ever? Let's see, what else? Ow, ow, hey, my feet are gone. Plus, hey, ow, ow, there's a branch perforating my colon. And will we be interviewing Vanilla Ice tomorrow? Scotty J will have the answer to that. And other things. Other stories of comedy. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And we'll talk Transformers here in a second. Because I have notes.
Oh, yeah? You went to see it, huh?
I did. I did indeed. And I have notes on the Transformers that we'll get to here in just a moment. Because I know everybody's just waiting with bated breath. I know no one's life can go on until you know what I think about the Transformers. Which, I do have to say, it really is, regardless of whether it's a good movie or a bad movie, and my thoughts on that will become, well, yeah, I'll just read you in the notes. It really just, even yesterday, which was a holiday, you know, and usually holidays, it just, it's not, you know, we come into our craziness, but you never really know who's, you know, who's at work, who's listening, who's driving around, who's gone, who's out of town. But even yesterday, there's a bunch of Transformers calls. So it really is, it is the cultural zeitgeist. It's a Q factor of like 90 on that. So we'll talk Transformers here in a second. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello, and how are you today?
Hello. I'm doing all right. How are you?
How was your deep fry yesterday?
It was good. I had lots of weird deep fried things.
Now, what did you take? Did you win?
No, I didn't win. I can't remember who won. No, I brought cheese. I just bought, like, cheese sticks and made mozzarella things. Squid was there and made these, like, and his cheese sticks were totally better, too, because he had mozzarella wrapped in, like, pretzels, and then we breaded it. It was really good.
Wait, mozzarella? No, but did he bread the cheese sticks himself in pretzels?
No, I thought he was going to, but I guess you can buy them that way.
Oh, like a combo.
Yeah,
like
so he had these cheese sticks, and then they breaded in pretzels, and then deep fried. So good.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And the best thing, though, was the deep-fried peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
They're so good. Tasted like French toast.
Deep-frying is one of those things that seems like a great idea to me sometimes, and then I start to eat those things, and they just turn on me.
It was pretty gross, actually, toward the end of the afternoon, because there are three deep-fryers going, and it's just all in the air, and you feel totally greasy and disgusting.
This is just gross. Yeah, your hair's all... Your skin's coated with a fine mist of animal fat. Hi, Tim. How you doing? Remember when we deep-fried Twinkies that time on the show? And it was just... Remember, it was a couple years ago? Matt brought in his deep fryer.
Oh,
we deep-fried Twinkies on the show. And then I think we deep-fried Oreos or something, too. And it was just... Like, you know that it's going to be bad. Yeah, I mean, you know it's going to be disgusting.
I mean, it's really good sometimes.
You lie to yourself, though. No, it'll be tasty. It's never tasty. I'll grant you that deep-fried turkey was fantastic when Matt did that year, but that's it, man. That's the extent. Of course, and I come from a deep-frying people. My family, my dad, we had the Fry Daddy, like the home, whatever, that trashy thing you buy at Sears. And so my parents would just deep-fry things constantly, but it just, I think it's just because I don't have a lot of deep-fried food now. It's like I don't have a lot of donuts now. And so it seems like it'll be a good idea. It's like, here's another thing. It's like, I don't drink a lot of soda. I don't drink much soda at all just because I'm real anal about my teeth. And soda's really bad for your teeth. And working in radio, you know, you typically have no insurance, and you don't want any problems with your mouth. So I don't drink soda. But Laura and I went to get a pizza last night. And just once in a blue moon, I'm like, well, you know what? I crave an RC Cola. And so the guy gives me an RC Cola. Same thing. I get about three swallows into it, and I'm just like, it's just vile. Just couldn't go any further. And I'm not a health food guy. It's just there's certain things that sound really great. And then you got about halfway through, and you're like, why did I order this?
That's every time I get Safeway Chinese food.
Yeah.
I feel like, because I love it, and I crave it, and then halfway through it, it's never filling, and it's always greasy.
Let me tell you this. You know, here's a little bit of shame. I bought another bag of those mystery-flavored Doritos. Those X15Z stroke J meat Doritos, whatever they are. I bought a bag like a couple weeks ago. I'm like, oh, mystery Doritos. Again, because it, like in my memory, they somehow seem to be good. And then I got a handful in them. Like, this is ass. Why am I eating these? I had no explanation.
Yeah, they weren't that good.
All right, Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, it's an inconvenient truth that Al Gore's son enters rehab on the eve of his global warming shindig.
Bam!
A near riot in Clackamas forces police to close it down early on the glorious 4th. An exploding cannon injures a Tumwater boy. A honeymooner is killed in a freak cow accident in Burns. Three are shot to death in a fireworks dispute back east. And three are charged with enslaving Chinese acrobats.
It really is the most American of days, isn't it, Tim?
Mm-hmm. It certainly is.
Fantastic. All right. Let's see here. It looks like, okay, now I've got estimates here about the Transformers 6-day haul and what it's going to be. So I've got an estimate here from a reliable source about what they expect the 6-day haul to be and whether or not I will lose my bet with Court and Fatboy. We should probably talk to Scotty here before I do my Transformers notes. Scotty, if you can please now to be entering the... it doesn't want to play for some reason. Oh, it's because of this K2 hooligan story. Scotty, if you can please to be entering the studio now. Scotty, who was absent yesterday because he lacks a serious work ethic. Hi, Scotty. How are you doing today?
Hello, Barton Park, Clackamas.
Okay.
I'm doing great,
hello.
Rick.
Are you doing great? Are you hungover?
Semi.
Well, because you didn't work yesterday, so I figured you were drinking on Tuesday. And you're wearing your Tom Petty shirt, which is the shirt you wear when you're hungover because it hides wrinkles and stains.
That or the Dr. Pepper shirt.
Totally, exactly.
And pitting.
Pitting, don't say that.
Yeah.
So what did you do yesterday?
Yesterday we kind of sat around the house for a little while in the morning, and then we went out to this gentleman's place on the Willamette River.
What time was
in
that?
Milwaukee. We got there around...
Let's go hang out in glorious 2 Milwaukee.
O'clock. 2 o'clock.
2 yeah. o'clock, so you didn't even need the day off, you son of a bitch.
I guess you're right. No, I actually spent a little family time.
Yeah, whatever. Sure, you did.
My kids were at the coast with the grandparents for over a week, and they came home yesterday right around 11. So, we spent the day with the kids.
Aw, isn't that sweet? Okay.
You'll never be successful in this business without destroying your family's
good.
No, it's true. I'd get rid of that family instinct right now because they're going to pay the price eventually, sooner or later, Scotty. If I were you, if you want to make it in radio, I would cut your family loose right now so they have time to look for a new daddy. Really, because it's going to happen eventually. So
are they going to hate you in 5 years?
Why not give them a running start?
I already see signs of that.
Good. Excellent. That means things
aren't
are happening.
Aren't you off today, Dad? No, I got to go see Rick Emerson.
Yes. Your kids will hate me, too, by the way. But I'm okay with it. I'm zen with it. Okay.
You will die alone.
That's your fortune cookie. Just open your fortune. You will be eaten by dogs.
So, yeah, it was a fun day at the river. For okay. sure. And I was boating, and I did have a few toddies. So.
Okay. Are we going to be talking to Vanilla Ice tomorrow?
Yes, we are.
What time?
It's going to be it's a surprise time.
You don't know.
It's in between.
That's kind of mean to promise something that you don't
know.
Exactly
it is going
to
happen.
Weren't you the same guy that stood in that exact spot and told me I was going to talk to Alice Cooper? That it was a lock?
I don't remember doing that.
Uh-huh. So, how sure are you on a scale of 1 to 10 that I'm going to talk to Vanilla Ice tomorrow?
Well, I hate doing this. You know, I hate saying stuff like that because you know how these stars
Because you're not
are.
Sure at all.
You I'm learning know. About how stars react.
This is Scotty came in this morning, and he wouldn't call him Vanilla Ice. Scotty was calling him Rob. So Rob's getting off the plane tomorrow around 1:15. I'm like, who? Rob. Who? Rob. And I who? And he goes, Vanilla Ice.
Mr. Ice.
Mr. I should totally call him that. That's what the New York Times called him. They called him
really?
Mr. Ice.
Okay.
Like they call Meatloaf Mr. Loaf. It's true. It's absolutely true.
You know, Mr. Loaf, what have you been doing?
Okay, so, but Vanilla Ice, phone interview tomorrow. Okay. Because we're bringing him to jail Saturday at Outlaws.
I can narrow it down between the 1:30 to 2:30 zone. Somewhere in there.
So tomorrow we will be talking to Vanilla Ice between 1:30 and 2:30.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
How confident do you feel about that? 1 to 10?
Let's give it a 7.
Okay, great. Fantastic. So there's a 30% chance it's not going to happen.
Yes, I always need that, you know, flexibility.
A buffer zone. All right. Hey, are we having, what's her name, Stephanie Schneiderman, that girl with whom you have a
we've
crush?
Been playing,
on whom you have a crush?
I don't know where that comes from, but we've been playing.
Because you keep going on about how hot she is.
As far
and,
as artist
and we saw her
ability.
At PDX Teen Idol, and like the next day you were trying to book her on the show. You kept hounding me about it in the hallway. We got to book Stephanie Schneiderman on the show.
Well, I told you right there when they were playing that these guys are great and they should be on the show. That's as far as it goes.
Don't get me wrong.
I've been playing phone
lady.
Tag.
All right. So that's not going to happen today.
I just keep reaching the cell phone voicemail. So
she's trying to send you a message, Scotty. She's just not into you.
Probably.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Bye now. All right. So at the bottom of the hour, we got Steve Castamon. So I got a good 6 minutes here before we have to break. Okay, here's what I can do. I can either spin the wheel of what are we going to do next and do something out of the pile randomly, or I can do my Transformers notes. Here's the thing. Here's a little caveat. I may not have time to do all of them.
All right, you should spin the wheel.
All right. What if the wheel lands on my Transformers notes?
Uh-oh.
Oh, the irony.
Oh.
Oh, for the love of... Hold on a second. My prize wheel doesn't want to spin. Sounds like a euphemism for something. Here we go. Why, hello, it's time to play People You're Glad That You Are Not. Let's go to the news, shall we? This is from RTE.com. 2 stars of the upcoming West End production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat have been injured during rehearsals in the show. According to The Sun, 2 stars were hurt when their feet were crushed by large pieces of moving machinery. One man had his toes, quote, totally pinched off. Oh, the other guy, listen to this. The other guy didn't lose any toes. It's time to talk about small injuries that are horrifying. But did have... Brace yourselves now. One of the actors did have, quote... This is so horrifying. One of the actors had... several toenails torn off. You know, what is it about your toenails and your fingernails that I don't understand why that's so painful? It's like there's got to be some scientific explanation as to why something that happens to... Let me talk about terrifying... small injuries like paper cuts. There has to be some explanation as to why paper cuts hurt so badly. Now, you can slam your entire hand in a door, and it hurts, but, you know, like a paper cut will hurt about the same, depending on how deep it is. I mean, it's just the worst. It's the worst thing ever. You ever get a paper cut in your tongue? I was licking an envelope one time, and, you know, and then, you know, it's like that time I bit clean through my tongue when I was a kid. That was no fun. Also, this. Let's talk about this. Do you ever inadvertently bend your fingernails back somehow? Like you haven't trimmed your fingernails quite enough? You go to pick something up, or you're trying to pull up a stuck jar lid, and then your fingers slip, and then the edge of the jar lid goes underneath your fingernails and bends your fingernails back. Sometimes it bends your fingernails so far back there's like that white line when they bend back into place. That's no good. All right. How about this? Here's the other one. Here's final.
Why are you talking about fingernails?
Because that's what the wheel landed on, Sarah. Small horrifying injuries. You said I could be talking about the Transformers right now, but we spun the wheel instead. Final horrifying fingernail injury. I remember one time I was reaching into a garbage disposal, and this is not the garbage disposal activating again. It had nothing to do with the disposal itself. I was working in the kitchen, though. Reaching into the garbage, because, you know, the garbage disposal wouldn't get rid of citrus rinds, so you had to reach in every now and again and pull out the, like, lemon rinds and throw them away. So I reach into the garbage disposal, and there had been a small paring knife that had landed in there, blade up. Reach in there, blade right underneath my fingernail.
Oh.
Not into my hand, not into the tip of my finger. Blade, right underneath my fingernail. Right in my middle finger on my right hand. There you go. Apparently, the actors apparently, quote, didn't move quickly enough. And let's do this one, too. A 14-year-old boy avoided death by a fraction of a millimeter after impaling himself on a tree while playing in a neighbor's garden. This is in Wales. Rhys Terrigan lost his footing as he climbed an ash and fell more than 7 meters onto the branch of a pointy lilac tree below. The spear-like branch skewered through his body, missing arteries and organs by a whisker. The 3-centimeter-wide wooden spike pierced his buttock and sliced through his upper abdomen before exiting at the front of his body in an accident in a friend's garden in Pembroke. It also narrowly missed his heart, his stomach, his bladder, his testicles, his liver, and his kidneys. Worst part?
Here's the worst part?
I love names in Wales. British names are hilarious. They all sound made up. Rhys was saved by fireman Brinley Skeels. Brinley Skeels totally sounds like a made-up name from some Lewis Carroll poem. 'Twas brillig and the Brinley Skeels gyred in the wabe. Rhys was saved by fireman Brinley Skeels, who heard his screams of agony, realizing that the slightest movement could result in a fatal injury. Rhys was forced to dangle from the tree for 90 minutes until firemen could cut him free.
Stuck on the tree for an hour and a half with a thing through his butt? And the neighborhood kids, they're probably mocking him.
The fireman, Brinley Skeels, attempted to distract the boy from his injuries by talking about football. There you go. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Steve Kastenbaum at the bottom. Lisa Goddard later on. Jim Roop. Tim Riley's Noon News Hour. More about Vanilla Ice tomorrow. And, of course, Transformers notes. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2297. Let me just say this. See if you can complete this sentence. I love it when people live right into a cliche. This is that story from Elton John when he was at the concert for Diana. We'll get Steve Kastenbaum here in just a second. This is from thisislondon.uk. When Elton John's chauffeur-driven people carrier was stopped... What is a people carrier? It's a car. I'm looking at it right now. People Carrier seems like some sort of weird futuristic, that's like a Demolition Man thing. Anyway. When his chauffeur-driven people carrier was stopped because of a royal security around the concert for Diana, the singer flew into one of the rages for which he's renowned. "Get out of my effing way," he screamed at a policeman. I love Elton John. "Get out of my effing way," he screamed at a policeman. "I've been working all effing day. I need to get to my effing dressing room." And then, what did he say, Sarah? What does every celebrity say?
"Don't you know who I am?"
Right there. "Don't you know who I am?" Bam! Thank you, Elton. God bless you. Oh, and apparently, by the way, the dressing room is 50 feet away from the stage. They said he'd have to walk. Blew into a race. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From New York City, the city that never sleeps, the one, the only, Steve Kastenbaum from CNN Radio. Why, hello and how are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
All right. Have you managed to center yourself, as the Zen Buddhists say? Have you found your center after yesterday?
I've come down a bit, yes.
You were really, I mean, Tuesday I think it reached its apogee, but even yesterday you were still, I could hear you vibrating over the phone. It's like you were in squiggle vision or something. You were so excited about the hot dog eating thing.
Rarely is there such a competition that disgusts you so deeply down in the core that you just fall in love with it.
I know. I read some dick columnist from, ChicagoSports.com or something, just some guy who's just a jackhole. Wrote this whole column, like, going on and on about how competitive eating is disgusting and how it ought to be gotten rid of and how it shames us as Americans. That guy can pound sand. It's fantastic. How long has this contest been happening at Nathan's?
Well, the Nathan's one has been going on since 1916.
1916? See, that guy can eat it. No pun intended. I mean, it's been doing, that's what? That's 91 years, right?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, and we're not the only ones. In Japan, this is why Kobayashi is so good at what he does. They have a lot of eating contests there as well, you know, like sushi, octopus, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's not just us. I mean, in Germany they do, you know, all sorts of knockwurst eating contests.
Knockwurst.
American things.
You know, can I just tell you this? I don't know what it is. I know my father would roll over in his trailer. If you heard me say this, so much German food, which I know that I am supposed to like, is just revolting. It just sounds gross. Like, I don't even know what knockwurst is. It just doesn't sound like a thing I would ever possibly want to eat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like a culture that came up with something called blood sausage. Why would I ever want to eat that? I don't even know what blood sausage is. Might not even have any blood in it, for all I know. It just sounds it's like head cheese. It just sounds unnerving.
When I was in Germany, I was at some party and they were serving, you know, we have steak tartare. They were serving, I kid you not, pig tartare.
Have some raw pork. Have some raw pork, and why don't you just eat that right in the emergency room of the hospital?
Yeah.
Jesus. All right. Let's see. Well, what the hell am I?
I got off track. Sorry.
Nah, it's okay. I just was distracted by a thing. Don't worry about it. Not your fault, Steve. Don't blame yourself. So Joey Chestnut, just for recap for those foolish listeners who are not, the thing about this show is if you tune out for even a day, on a day like yesterday, if you're not listening, you're going to be behind when you rejoin the program. So I will, though, just give a brief recap here. So as you said, Joey Chestnut, now was he favored to win the hot dog eating contest?
He was favored, although a lot of folks thought, and they may be correct, that Takeru Kobayashi was perpetrating a ruse when he said that he had, you know, jaw problems because of jaw surgery. Because yesterday, even though he said he had acupuncture in the morning so he could open his jaw wider than he had been able to, he still kept up with Joey Chestnut almost hot dog for hot dog.
Well, maybe he was just playing through the pain, though. Maybe he's just a fantastic competitor.
True. He really did look like he was in bad shape at the end of the competition when they told him, you know, stop, put down your hot dogs. He was having trouble keeping it down. It was disgusting.
Was there a Vegas line on this? Can you bet on competitive eating? Legally?
I didn't research that, but, you know, they bet on everything in Vegas, so I'm sure somebody had it up there.
I wish I'd looked into it or something, because, man, if there was a line on this, I totally would have taken, I would have taken your advice. I would have put some money on Joey Chestnut, and I'd be in the chips today.
Yeah, definitely. And the scary thing about it was they had these really nice looking women behind the guys, just like in a boxing match. You know,
right.
They hold the ring cards. Well, these women were holding scorecards and flipping the card after each hot dog was eaten over that competitor's head. And the one who was behind Joey Chestnut, she missed a couple of hot dogs early on. She couldn't keep up with him. He was so fast. And So it looked like they were tied 63-63.
Yeah,
there was all this tension in the air. It was great. And then the commissioner of the International Federation of Competitive Eating came in and did the count and declared that Chestnut won by six hot dogs. By three hot dogs.
Do either of these guys, well, Kobayashi certainly probably did, but do either of these guys support themselves solely by being competitive eaters? Is that their source of income?
Not that I know of. However, yesterday's competition was sponsored by Heinz 57, so the grand prize was $57,000.
Well, I'm not going to complain about that. I mean, this Joey Chestnut is going on tour. What does he do? This sounds dumb. What, does he just travel the country and eat things while people watch?
You know, I was so enamored by his eating ability that I forgot what he does for a living. I think he's a student, an engineering student or something like that. I can't remember. I was just perplexed by his incredible tolerance for food.
I think you mentioned yesterday that he's going to be making some appearances around the country. I mean, it's just so weird. I wonder if you come down and see a guy eat some stuff downtown today, folks.
You can be sure he's going to be around. I mean, how could you not milk this for all it's worth?
Oh, seriously, it really is a great. It is not just an American thing, I suppose, but I mean, I know they do it all over the world, but it really is. It does seem in many ways like the quintessential American sport. You might find it interesting on the CNN prep sheet today. Whoever writes these, it says, CNN Steve Kastenbaum was there and says the hot dog eating contest was one of the greatest sporting events he's ever witnessed live. And then it says parenthetically, Steve must not get out much. So there you go. Little editorial comment there from the CNN staff.
I saw that. I have to play for you a little quick soundbite from one of the greatest moments.
Oh, please do. Play whatever you want, my friend.
Here it is.
In first place with 66 hot dogs and buns. Joey Chestnut!
It doesn't get any better than that.
Dude, I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. It's great. It's wonderful. It's great and stupid and glorious and fantastic and amazing and pointless. And it is all that this fading republic really needs to restore a sense of vitality, my friend.
That's what's so great about it. You hit the nail on the head. It's disgusting and pointless. That's why I think I like it so much.
Yes, welcome to my world. Hey, real quickly, just we got a few other things here. I mean, I know that you're probably sick of talking about this, but this Saturday is 7707.
Yes.
And, you know, we're doing some crap ourselves. We have a music show we're putting on at whatever, a local venue, and that's coming up this set. We're bringing the one and only Vanilla Ice to town. That is coming up this Saturday, and we're going to be doing a bunch of giveaways and everything. But I know that, like, and Sarah, this is true. Sarah, this morning at our local supermarket, at a place called Safeway, Sarah was shopping there, and her bill was
$7.77. No.
It's true. It's true, my friend. I saw the receipt. She has the receipt in her hand. I'm looking at it right now.
Is Sarah going to play, do you have like a pick four lottery?
Well, we have like a Powerball thing, right? Yeah.
Here in New York, we have a pick four. I would totally play those four numbers for you now.
Do you claim your name is Christine?
That's my mom's name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I use her Safeway card.
Oh, okay. All right. No, when I get my Safeway card, they think my name is Jerry Garcia. All right. So, hey, blah, 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 blah. So there's people getting married and doing whatever and stuff.
Yeah, bookings
and
around the country, three times greater than normal for this weekend, this time of year for weddings.
You should do a depressing follow a few years from now when 60% of them are divorced.
Yeah, some folks are actually getting married on this day because apparently in the Bible, the number seven is symbolic of completion and that sort of thing. So they feel like they're being completed, you know, by marrying their soulmate on this day, so why not do it on 7707? I really doubt the divorce rates for people who get married this Saturday are going to be any lower than the typical divorce rates, you know?
By the way, just a final note here. Somebody says that Kobayashi was doing commercials for Coors Light. Saw an ad on TV just the other day, Kobayashi advertising Coors Light. So there you go. So this does seem like a thing that has gotten renewed traction, or new traction anyway, in America recently.
Yeah,
so.
A lesson in intestinal fortitude.
Seriously. All right, Steve Kastenbaum, do you have big plans for today?
Just working, putting together some reports for Live Earth concerts, which are also on 7707.
Now, I know I should be talking about this with Jim Roop later, because he's covering the fact that Al Gore's kid got busted with a trunk full of drugs. But is this one concert or like a bunch? Is this one of those things where there's like one on every continent? I don't even know what this concert is about.
There are eight concerts taking place around the world. They're full-day concerts, New York, London, Johannesburg, Rio, Shanghai, Tokyo, Sydney, Hamburg. You'll be able to watch them on any of the NBC cable channels, and you'll also be able to watch them on the internet. And there's like all these free ways to watch the concert. And the whole idea is to get out this message. They're calling it an SOS, the Concerts for a Climate in Crisis.
Yeah,
that's what they're calling
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'll get right on it. All right.
I got to ask you this. I mean, did the concert to save Africa have an effect? Remember that one? I feel like people go to these things. And
No. In fact, all I remember is a documentary a couple years later showing, like, thousands and thousands of pounds of food, like, rotting in a warehouse because they couldn't agree on how to fly it there.
Nice.
Also, no one there has an oven. So, all right. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
Thank you very much. You too.
Thank you. Steve Kastenbaum in New York City, ladies and gentlemen. It's 503-733-2970. We'll get Lisa Goddard here in a second. This is Brandon. Brandon! You're on the
Hello.
Rick Emerson Show. Hi, what's up?
Hi, so on Tuesday, I was listening to an FM station here in the market after, of course, you had gone off the air.
Thank you.
And so the DJs, I guess, are going down to Austin City Limits Festival
right.
in September.
Yeah.
And so what they decided to do was...
When you say Austin City Limits, is that like the South by Southwest thing? Austin Music Festival?
It's a music festival in Austin that's not South by Southwest.
Oh, I know what you're talking about now.
Right,
somebody referenced it the other
show.
Day. Yeah, okay. All right.
So they were taking calls from their listeners as for things that they should do on their drive down to Austin, Texas.
Where are they now?
Yes, they were.
So they're having the audience weigh in on sights to see,
yes.
places to stop on their cross country
roadside attractions, et cetera,
on their cross country car trip. That really is. That's, you know what it is. That's top flight radio work, is what they've probably been promoted by now.
I would imagine so. In fact, I think they're in line for syndication.
That's groundbreaking, is what that is, sir.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for the heads up, my friend.
No problem. Thought you'd want to know.
Yes. Thank you. That's
have
Brandon.
A good one.
There you go. Well, we're always glad to help. We're always glad to come to the aid of those with less talent. Why, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill, CNN. I can't pick the phone up. All right, thank you. From the Hill, CNN radio correspondent to the stars, the one and only Lisa Goddard. Why, hello, Lisa.
Hey there. How's it going, Rick?
Hi, how are you? You sound
typical technical problems over here. I'm trying to...
You sound a little harried today.
I am a little bit. We're trying to get our headsets to work, but I guess... I've got the fine Ebony, the intern from CNN TV, that I've brought down here to engage in the lovely world of radio. But she can't hear you. I don't think, right?
You have an intern. What?
Yeah, there's
you have an intern from Ebony.
Well, her name is Ebony.
Oh, I thought you meant from the magazine.
No,
it's all
no
very
she's not
confusing.
From the magazine, Ebony. No, her
all
name
right.
is Ebony.
Okay.
She gets that all the time. She gave me the look like, I've heard that before.
Well, I didn't, I don't want to be, sorry. Let me just be like another lame white man making terrible jokes. That's what I thought you, so let me understand this. So you were there, now you're using, do you have one of those, like, those John Madden, like those Mike Ditka headsets where you're on the sidelines?
Oh, I wish I did. You know what? I'm actually calling you from the CNN bureau today instead of my little closet in the Capitol. So I don't know the equipment here. But, no, I just have your regular Peter Brady, you know. wait, how's it going? You know, if it's time to change, you've got to I've got that headset.
Please tell me you were just singing. Please tell me you know that Brady song.
You've got to rearrange who you are and what it's going to be. Something like that. I'm close.
Bam! That's gold is what that is. That is fantastic. Let me tell you.
No. Yeah.
But you got to do the, you got to change that. You got to do the little.
It's that one, exactly.
You get, see, I don't even know the rest of the song. All I can do is I can do that little, I can do that octave crack or whatever the hell that is. That's it, man. Fantastic. All I remember, the scene from, I just remember that scene from that episode. Let me just become a living Gen X stereotype. I remember that scene from the Brady Bunch episode where, where Greg is sitting there and he's writing the song, and they do this shot of him writing, and then he tears the thing and he crumples the piece of paper and he throws it, and then the camera pans as he throws the piece of paper, and then there's the huge mound of discarded songs that he has written and thrown away.
Oh yes, I do remember that. Was he Johnny Bravo? What was his name?
It was Johnny Bravo.
That was it.
Was Johnny Bravo? Then later that name, of course, adopted by the Cartoon Network.
Right. Fantastic.
And that scene, by the way, where he tears off a piece of paper, blah blah blah, crumples it up, throws it up. Later stolen, flat out Xeroxed by Bosom Buddies in the opening credit sequence for Bosom Buddies. And even I'm amazed that I know this. The opening credit sequence for Bosom Buddies. There's a scene where Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari, who are copywriters, are writing a commercial and they can never get it right, and so they tear off a piece of paper, crumple it, throw it, camera pans, big pile of crumpled paper on the other side of the cubicle, flat out stolen from the Brady Bunch.
That's fantastic. fantastic. I can't believe that you do. Actually, I do believe that you know.
It's what it is. Hey, you're the one who was just singing the Peter Brady song like 30 seconds ago. So we're both couple that with your Rush observations and your many Footloose references, and you really are the greatest person who's ever lived in the opinion of this audience. I'm going to sit here. I'm not going to wax your car, as Paul Thomas Anderson would say.
Nice, yeah.
But the amount of email I got from dudes in the audience when you were talking about Rush the other day.
Oh, no kidding. That's
really
great.
If I could have just a daily segment called Lisa Goddard comes out and talks about Rush, I mean, I would have like a 40 share.
I have to say, you know, it brought me in. You know, I was hoping to be in the fold, but I could not believe the stuff those guys were doing.
Oh, no, they're amazing. I'm not a huge Rush fan, but I really do respect them. They are amazing musicians. And you got, I mean...
And I told you about the chickens, right? On stage?
No.
Well, yeah, I guess Rush fans know that I think they had their 30th anniversary tour. I'm going to get some stuff wrong here. I'm new. I don't know what I'm doing. But their last tour, they had... like washing machines or dryers on the stage. It was pretty cool. They're just sitting there in clothes or, you know, going around in the dryer the whole time. Well, this time they had three very large boxes of, or like hot boxes of rotisserie chickens. I mean, they were large. They were like 5 or 6 feet tall of just chickens spinning around during the whole show.
Was there an explanation given for this?
No, but there was a chef. If you noticed, it was actually in the shadows. You had to kind of be watching the chickens, as of course I was. That a chef came out and basted the chickens.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And blah da da blah da da blah.
Yeah, all right. Blah, blah, blah.
All right.
Hey, how are you?
I'm dandy. Just as a side note here, if you ever want to irritate a Rush fan, if you ever want to really annoy somebody who's into Rush, make this casual observation during a conversation. Just sort of casually throw out, go, yeah, you know, I'm a pretty big Rush fan. I think they're great. I really think their first album is the best. Just say that to Sporbert one of these days.
See, I even know why that's bad. I mean, I am not advanced.
Oh, no, they'll just
go. I know
go,
the difference. I know that's not the same Rush.
No, they'll go apoplectic when
they
you say
will.
That.
Although, apparently, Jason's take on that, he says there was actually some decent stuff on that album, but, I mean, he says it's just not even remotely the same.
No,
but
because
there was some good stuff.
They sounded a lot like Black Sabbath on that album. The only really notable thing about the first Rush album is it did spawn their first single, which is a song called Working Man, which is...
You're kidding. That's from that first album?
Yeah, Working Man is from the first, the eponymous... yeah.
I can't believe that. I can't believe that's pre... I liked that song, and now I'm all confused about it.
I am blowing your mind!
You're blowing my... Oh, geez, I'm a Rush geek now. I can't believe it.
All right, we have to stop. Hey, was there wasn't a tornado yesterday, was there?
No, there was no tornado in Washington,
all right.
D.C.
Sorry to have steered you the wrong way. It should not come as any surprise that Fox News were the ones reporting that inaccurate story.
That's right. Well, you know what? They actually did evacuate the entire National Mall, though.
So why, they did the same thing in Philadelphia yesterday, too. What was the deal with evacuating the mall?
There was a tornado warning.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And the funny thing about it, though, is this is classic. They, you know, they evacuated the whole mall. It's a big story. Evacuating the mall. And I run down there. And the funny thing is, really, people were just, like, picking up their blanket and moving across the street. Like, it was really, you know, they left the mall, but they were still, you know, like, 300 feet away.
So it wasn't like an evacuation. It was like a slight shifting.
It really was basically a shifting, yes. Yeah, and of course, that led to many a conspiracy theorist. Everybody I was interviewing was saying, come on, tell us. You know, really, Al-Qaeda's out here. They just want us to go because there's a real threat.
Al-Qaeda's here to see Lee Greenwood.
Right. There's a threat from Lee Greenwood. Right. The Hare Krishnas, though, many of them stayed on the mall during the tornado threat, I noticed.
Excellent. Yeah. And then right above that, so there's these two stories back-to-back, one of which we talked about yesterday, and then above this is this business of... It says, as more concerns surface about food from China, and when they say food, they're talking about this, like, 400,000 tubes of toothpaste that are, like, filled with, like, ground right. ground glass or something.
Right. Well, you know, China has had massive problems, and only after the pet food incident, and now we've had this seasoning. I don't know if you've ever heard of veggie booty. Apparently, veggie
yes.
booty has the seasoning in it comes from China, and they found salmonella in the seasoning, which is that's not so great. So watch out for veggie booty. I mean, I guess they're trying to fix it from the manufacturers somewhere. But anyway, after this, now everyone's looking at China, and it turns out that Chinese consumers have known for a while now that there's been fake baby milk, fake eggs, a lot of really problematic food. And now Congress is getting ready to have a very large debate over how we label our food, whether our meat and produce needs to have on it exactly every country essentially that piece of food has gone through, whether it was raised somewhere, slaughtered somewhere else, those kinds of things.
Well, here's a dumb question. Doesn't the FDA inspect food that we sell in America even if it was originally made somewhere else?
The FDA does. The FDA is supposed to inspect food, but the FDA themselves has said that for the most part, they have responded to concerns rather than, I mean, they don't look at every shipment of food that comes in the country. Instead, they, if there's a problem that comes up, then they trace that problem and then inspect that plant or any other plants connected to it. So now with China, the FDA is changing its policy, and they actually have shut down, we had the story a couple weeks ago, a shipment of many, I think, six different kinds of fish from China. And that's good for the fisheries probably up where you are. But the FDA is obviously changing a little bit how it looks at things. The interesting thing is that meat, like beef, is actually regulated by, not by FDA, but by the USDA. So it's a different inspection system that beef goes through. But now consumer advocates are saying it doesn't matter. We think people should be able to go to the grocery store, pick up a piece of beef, and know that, you know, that cow came from China or the cow came from Canada and then was slaughtered in China and then came to the U.S. Right?
Especially because, really, I mean, let's be honest, how hard can you expect some guy to be inspecting the food if he works for like 8 cents a day, you know? I mean, really, how much work is he going to be? It doesn't seem like its quality is essentially job one in some of those places. So
well, one of our reporter in China, John Voss, had a great line. I'm probably going to get it wrong the other day, but he played some tape from a Chinese official who said, you know, something to the fact that, you know, Chinese food, there's nothing to worry about. Everyone knows that Chinese products are always high quality. And then there was like a second thing about them. I can't remember what he said. They're always high quality. They're always very good. And they're cheap. And then John Voss tagged out his piece saying, well, we know one out of three. They're always cheap.
Yeah. Let's. Before we go here, we do have, I have not screened this, but I do believe we have a Rush comment for you. Before
oh, fantastic. All right.
Mark, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with Lisa Goddard. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey.
I'm actually the son of a Rush fan who became a Rush fan because of my father, and I actually asked him this question when I was watching a video. And if you look at where the washing machine was, it's right behind Geddy Lee, where his amp would normally be, because he doesn't use one anymore.
Oh.
He actually, everything is processed digitally, so he just kind of sticks whatever he feels like back there.
So instead of the amp, it's sort of a placeholding device.
Yes.
For whatever sort of appliance or large restaurant equipment he would like?
Pretty much.
Sir, do you have a World of Warcraft name?
Yes.
What is it?
It is Calphinus.
Okay. Thank you.
What? See, now, I'm really enjoying this live show. I feel like this is one of the most frenetic akimbo, to use my words. Uh-oh, did you guys lose me?
No, I think Mark, Mark went away. Yeah.
Okay. What War of what? I know nothing of this.
World of Warcraft. That'll be. I don't know that Jason's going to be able to clue you in on that, but World of Warcraft is. I know we're so behind here. That was just a shot in the dark, by the way, that turned out to be completely accurate. When I asked him if he had a World of Warcraft name, because it was like the odds were like 1 in 2 because he was a Rush fan, you know, and it's like asking a World of Warcraft player if he is a Rush fan. World of Warcraft, and I will describe it exactly as the guy at Fry's Electronics described it to me the other, I don't know, it was like a year ago when I was there buying like a cable of some kind.
Okay.
And the guy said, what do you need the cable for? And I said, well, I'm doing some online gaming, and I need to kind of bulk up my system. And he said, do you play World of Warcraft? And I said, what's that? And he said, it's a massively multiplayer online role-playing game. And so that's what the World of Warcraft is. It's a whole lot of guys with names like Eric Blood Axe 55.
Well,
so,
what was Mark's name? I've forgotten it already.
Mark, his name was, I don't know, Calthornicus or something. I don't know. Something,
oh, my gosh, I'm loving that.
Something that he doodled on his peachy folder during debate class. All right, we got to run. Lisa, it is always a pleasure. Are you on tomorrow?
I'm not on tomorrow.
I damn all the luck.
Damn it. I will be reporting on weddings, though, on Saturday morning at 7 a.m.
Well, I'll be asleep, so have fun with that.
All right,
enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you soon,
okay.
Lisa. All right,
bye
now. There's Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic.
She was especially giddy today.
She really was.
I think maybe, she's trying to impress Ebony.
Well, yes. It's 503.
Show her jovial side.
Yes. The lighter side of Lisa. All right, we have the break. We'll come back. Tim Riley around the corner with the noon news hour. Scotty says, listeners are demanding my Transformers info. Yeah, I'm sure they're demanding. Storm the gates. Mm-hmm. All right, back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Still to come, Jim Roop. Don't go anywhere. It's 503-733-2970. Here's Faster Pussycat. The Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. That Mark guy emailed me. Apparently he's, his World of Warcraft name is something Calthenius, and he's a Blood Elf Paladin. You know, like, if you cared. Ladies and gentlemen of the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, we have at least 3 hours worth of horrific 4th of July stories.
Excellent.
They get progressively worse as we go along.
Yeah, let me pull up a chair.
All right, fantastic. So let's start with a typical one.
Do you have that one with the swimming pool?
Oh, I have that later, yeah.
Oh, that's a horrible story.
That is a horrible story.
All right.
Fireworks ignited a blaze that destroyed a home in Southwest early this morning. Apparently, some kids threw away sparklers that weren't done burning. So they burned out a house at 5716 Southwest Hamilton shortly after midnight. Apparently, the neighbor said there was a huge ball of orange fire and smoke. Firefighters got there, but they couldn't save the house. Two firefighters have minor injuries.
Where did they throw the sparklers away at? Like
in the trash.
In the house?
Inside a plastic garbage can.
In the house?
With other trash. It doesn't say.
Well, it must have been in the house, because if it was a trash can, mm-hmm. it wouldn't have caught the house on fire. If it was a metal trash can, it wouldn't have caught anything on fire.
It ignited the plastic trash. It in turn spread to the siding of the house, so it was outside. But close to the house, close enough.
Well done. Jesus. I mean, pardon me. I used to kind of bust on my dad for being a little overprotective when I was a kid. But, I mean, at the very least, he did instill, like, basic common sense in me. Like, if you're going to have a thing that a moment ago was 1,300 degrees, you might want to make sure that it's cool before you throw it, like, on top of a bunch of weeds somewhere.
Jesus. Then we have Canby police, clearly overwhelmed by gangsters. You know, they got about two cops there, and they're trying to arrest 14 people, and none of them will cooperate. They had spectacular gang fights there at the Canby Days fireworks show last night. About 20 members were fighting on a street corner. Officers told them to stop, and of course they wouldn't. Then there was a police pursuit, then the remaining gang members disregarded the officers' orders to leave and became verbal and belligerent. Due to the large amount of gang members, the arriving officers called for others to come from nearby towns. So, they've been taken to the Clackamas County Jail. So they rounded them all up, but it took a while.
For the mean streets of Canby.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's see here. Now, this is kind of an intricate story. A larger-than-expected 4th of July crowd at Carver Park along the Clackamas River resulted in brawls and arrests and prompted authorities to shut down the festivities early. There were near riot conditions at Carver Park in the early evening. There were between 2,500 and 5,000 people. That's quite an estimate. Between 2,500 and 5,000 people jamming into the tiny park, floating on the Clackamas River between 4 and 8. Many were drunk and rowdy. Deputies said disturbances included several assaults and fist fights. Apparently, the first fight broke out when somebody tossed their keys to another standing in the water. When the intended recipient didn't catch the keys, a mini riot ensued.
Hey, I'm going to toss the keys
reaction.
Hey, why don't you go stand on the river and be really drunk and staring into the sun while I toss you my car keys? Well done.
What else happened here? Racial slurs, profanity, and litter, just like on a regular day.
Fantastic.
let's see. Many of the rafters brought alcohol, making them drunk, tired, and angry.
It's the beginning to every great story.
I saw two gentlemen each carrying a case of beer to their raft. The Clackamas County Sheriff's Department is promising to crack down on these problems.
This reminds me when I was a kid.
These problems will take care of themselves once the new Max line is built. They can all come downtown and join their friends here.
Come down and ask me for change as I'm leaving Washington Mutual. Don't get me wrong. I love Washington Mutual. This is not a paid.
It's the greatest bank.
This is not a paid endorsement. I am a customer. I'm a happy customer of Washington
Everybody
Mutual.
Everybody likes Washington.
It's true.
Don't need to advertise.
Do you use Washington Mutual?
I do.
I have no, but they're great. They're a great bank. God love them. They're wonderful people. They treat me well. Mm-hmm. helped me out with a whole lot of things over the years. They're great guys. But I will say this, and it's not really their fault as such, but there's that Washington Mutual that empties you right out of Pioneer Courthouse Square, and it's impossible to leave that Washington Mutual, because what are you going to say? I don't have any money. You just came out of a bank. They know you have money. Yeah. So the homeless people, they just sit there like flies watching a rib roast, just sitting there just watching people leaving the bank because they know you have some kind of money on you. And then there's an ATM right there, which is a pain as well.
Yeah.
Freaking ATM, and then there's like a gaggle of street punks 40 feet away. But this is so great, though. The story about the guy tossing his car keys to the guy in the river. Reminds me, when I was growing up, my friend Rob was all drunk and stupid to begin with. All drunk at a park, much like this. Wasn't on the 4th of July, but just on a summertime day. You have to sort of picture this. So there's Rob and then a friend of his about 15 feet away at a beer cooler. Rob is sort of facing, like the sun is sort of shining into his face. And Rob does the whole, hey, toss me one of those bottles of Heineken or whatever. And the guy reaches into the cooler, tosses the beer to Rob. Rob looks up to catch the beer. Bam, sun right in the eyes. Bam, bottle of beer right into the face. Right into his chin. Fantastic.
God bless him.
All right.
Meanwhile, a Spokane resident, Robert Cleveley, was clocked going 67 miles an hour on I-90 in Spokane.
Mr. Cleveley!
When police tried to pull Cleveley over, he took off like a shot, trying to escape. Well, they caught him eventually, hiding in a trench and sleeping bag next to the railroad tracks.
How far are you going to go out of your way to not get a ticket?
Get out of the sleeping bag, I need it right now!
Did he steal the sleeping bag from somebody else?
It doesn't really...
He's sort of the hobo spider of Spokane speeders. Just taking some other guy's sleeping bag. Oh, fantastic.
Man, we have... let's see here.
Oh, somebody just emailed this, apparently in Canby. According to the Canby Herald, where all the hard news comes from. According to the Canby Herald, apparently the cops there are having a huge problem with all of their cop equipment being tagged by local gangs.
Yeah.
Really, what does it say? I mean, no, I don't mean any disrespect to our boys in blue, but seriously, what does it say about your police budget when you can't keep the police equipment from being tagged by gangs? I mean, come on now. Jeez,
and I believe their fire department, they have to call Oregon City to come down and put out fires.
I'm looking at this right here. There's a whole bunch of those, you know, those things they put by the side of the road that, I don't know whether they're cool or not, that tell you how fast you're going. You know, it's like you're driving. Your speed is, you know, yeah. 42, 41, 40, 39 as you hit the brake.
We recently had one of those put on my street because people are going too fast.
But I don't know how I feel about those. I mean, I guess it's sort of nice because it's like we could have ticketed you.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's like don't be a wise ass. Just ticket me or don't ticket me. You're telling me how fast I'm going. I'm going to, you know, it's like if I start speeding again as soon as I pass that thing.
Well, people don't know whether or not there's a camera in there.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
I have never been hit by a photo cop thing. Can I tell you that? My wife has gotten like 9 photo radar tickets in her life. I have never been hit by one of those once, ever. Ever, ever. I don't know whether I'm just a decent driver or whether, I don't know what it is. Anyway, but there's a big picture of one of those like, you are going 45 miles an hour things and it's just covered in gang graffiti. Well done. All right.
Well, things do get worse. In Olympia comes word, a cannon exploded when it was fired on the 4th of July, near a rural home near Tumwater, fatally injuring an 8-year-old boy. The boy was hit by a big piece of metal. He was standing about 100 feet away from the cannon, and some of the other shrapnel... Why did they put shrapnel in a cannon?
Well,
it was hurled as far as 235 feet. The blast occurred at the home of the boy's grandfather, and his parents were also present.
Oh, wait, was this a privately owned cannon? Or was this a city
looks
cannon?
That way.
Was this a cannon that, I don't mean to make light of it, but I mean, who owns a cannon?
They're trying to determine when, where, and how the cannon was manufactured. It was about 4.5 feet long.
I'm suspecting the answer is basement and a long time ago.
So the blast occurred because Oregon wasn't involved in the fight for independence.
No, I don't.
Oregon
mean...
didn't become a state during the 1840s or something. Anyway, let's see. The blast occurred as 9 adults and 7 children were entering an Independence Day party at the grandfather's house. It was discharged intentionally as part of the celebration. Why somebody else wasn't injured, I don't know. Investigators found one legal fireworks mortar shell and seized a large number of unexploded fireworks to determine if they were legal.
I'm sure that somebody would build a cannon in his basement and then randomly fire it over the heads of passers-by as they entered the party would never be caught with illegal fireworks. This is like my dad, and I tell the story every July 5th. But this is like my dad and grandfather, whose idea of celebrating our nation's independence was to get all liquored up on, like, half racks of beer, and then go out and just fire shotguns into the air in the backyard. And then every day, they would wake up the day, they would wake up on July 5th, and they would be puzzled by the fact that, like, our phone lines didn't work. And then a guy from, like, the phone company would come out, and he'd say, why, these phones appear to have been blown all to hell by gunfire. How did this happen? I can't even imagine, and I'll say this now because it was 20 years ago, or at least, I can't even imagine how many just citizens of Kennewick may have been maimed or killed or otherwise injured by my father and grandfather who would just take semi-automatic rifles into the backyard and just fire them randomly into the air. I guess the Kennewick logic is that, like, those don't land anywhere. I mean, I don't know exactly. I don't know if that would kill you. Like, if somebody fired, you know, like an M1 or something just into the air, into the air. If that were to go into the air and then come down and land on your head, I don't know if that would kill you, but it seems like it's not going to make you feel any better. It seems like you're not, that's not going to make you any healthier. So, at every 4th of July for probably 8-9 years, just gunfire into the air in my backyard. And it is very indicative of, by the way, the hometown that I come from and the time when I grew up, nobody cared about it. Cops didn't come out. Nobody called the authorities. What's that? Oh, it's that guy firing guns into the air randomly. Well, okay. I mean, everybody was totally fine with it.
Jesus.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
A man returning home from his honeymoon was killed after hitting a cow that wandered onto the highway near Burns. The man was driving home from his honeymoon in Northern California with his new wife sleeping in the back seat when it occurred. Then the lady who survived blanked out of passing mutters for help. She only suffered minor injuries, but her husband was flown to Bend Hospital. Both were in safety restraints, but hitting a cow will kill you.
This really is the most, this is the most pick-me-up news we've ever had, isn't it?
It is. Police in Ohio say three people have been shot to death by a neighbor apparently angry over noisy fireworks. An off-duty firefighter has been arrested in connection with the shootings near his home shortly after midnight. The shooter was apparently upset about loud noise from fireworks.
Shooter?
I barely knew her.
So he opened fire, killing two men and a woman. Another man was shot in the elbow, another woman wounded in the hand. Near Seattle, police say a man was shot during an argument at a fireworks celebration and died after AIDS workers tried to help him... he was threatened by the hostile crowd. And, of course, we heard about the 4-year-old child who was killed in the closet in Springfield when he lit off a bunch of fireworks.
Yeah, by the way, and this is Springfield, Oregon, right?
Yeah, Springfield, Oregon.
This is Springfield, Oregon, a home of crazy children and parents who don't pay any attention to them. Whatever you do, be sure to have it. Were these legal fireworks or illegal?
They don't say.
They must have been illegal fireworks because otherwise it would have been smoke inhalation, I guess, and you'd think the parents, who clearly were paying the closest of attention to the child... would have noticed that there was smoke coming out. So what you always want to do is have a huge closet full of fireworks and then make sure that your 4-year-old is never paid attention to and that he has access to lighters and or matches. That's always going to work out well for everybody.
I think people are getting dumber.
Carl,
that's
you're on the Rick Emerson
show. That's why we have holidays.
It really is true. Well, I mean, let's just be honest. Holidays really are sort of
a cleansing.
They are kind of a culling. They really are. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick. During my time in Los Angeles, they used to have PSAs on television and radio to warn people not to fire their guns into the air because the bullets coming down leave holes in people's roofs, and if you're outside and you catch a bullet in your head or your shoulder, you can really get hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hear plink, 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 plink.
That's
always serious. The 4th of July is the greatest time of the year to kill somebody because you can always blame it on somebody else.
Exactly. There's a little advice from the AM 970 news desk. If you're thinking about carrying out some sort of double homicide, consider the July 4th holiday, won't you?
Absolutely.
Maybe well, 970 I mean, needs some PSAs for the July 2nd time frame.
No, we don't care that much about
all right.
The public. All right, thank you, sir.
We don't do public service anymore. It's part of the fairness doctrine.
We're no longer obligated to help anybody.
If you're a club, school, or civic organization having an adventure interest, don't send it to us. We don't care. Okay. A 26-year-old Kansas man is dead after a fireworks accident. Brock Barrett was celebrating the holiday with family members when he lit some commercial-grade explosives. That's when something went terribly wrong and a 4-inch mortar blew up in his face. He died of massive brain injuries.
Okay. I'm sorry. Was this a homemade? Did you say this is a homemade mortar?
No, these are industrial-grade mortars.
But, I mean, they weren't legal. Again,
commercial-grade. Well, this is what you use in Iraq.
What is a commercial-grade mortar?
They're better than what's given to the general public.
Is that like a military mortar?
Yes, I would say so, yes.
And did the whole contraption just blow up?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he died of massive brain injury.
How massive could a brain really have been to begin with, though? Come on.
Philadelphia officials decided to go forth with their scheduled 4th of July fireworks late last night. And the 20-minute show went off despite the rain and reports that the show was canceled. Many of the spectators who camped out for hours were told to go home. Well, after the rain stopped, they decided to have the fireworks anyway with nobody there. Thousands of disappointed men, women, and children packed their lawn chairs and headed home. Moments later, the rain stopped, and they said, well, let's have the fireworks. Then they canceled them. Then they told them to watch them on TV.
Go home and watch them. We'll sell this on VHS next year. Look for it on demand next week.
That'd be good.
All right. Hey, no disrespect to the caller on hold. Scotty, is this the douchebag caller on hold? Should we take the douchebag caller? We can flip a coin or we can just say no. Sarah?
I don't care.
No, your tone of voice indicates that you do care.
No. I mean, I really don't. Let's go for it.
Well, he has to wait. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Coming up in a few minutes, a call from another douchebag, I guess. In the meantime, Gaffney Police, wherever that is, are working on an unusual case. An 18-year-old man was burned when someone in the car either threw or shot Roman candles at him as he was standing in his yard. The incident occurred last night on Hitty Hill Road. Michael Ormsby was hit by the fireworks. His shirt caught fire, then the fire spread to his pants, which caused some fireworks he was carrying in his pants pockets to explode.
Always fill your pants with fireworks when you leave the house.
Always.
Listen,
he has first, second, and third degree burns.
Oh, can you know the mark of a great story? It's the line, then the fire spread to his pants.
Mm-hmm. Which were filled with fireworks, causing his pants pockets to explode.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's why we have 4th of July, so we get to do this every year.
I think July 5th is our holiday. It really is. Oh, man. Well, you know, and I didn't go see the fireworks last night. I ended up just being a lazy bastard. I was sitting on the couch and with Max, and I was just like, well, I could get up. Nah. And I just sat back down on the sofa and watched TV. That's celebrating in true American style. I just sat on the sofa watching TV and eating snack chips. But I was getting in the kitchen doing something or other, and I heard, you know, like a siren go off, and I really do feel bad for cops and firefighters every year in the 4th of July. I really do.
Because they know smart people don't go outside.
Well, that's the thing, because they're having to deal with morons. And, I mean, with every passing year, they make fireworks more and more illegal. It's hard to get anything.
And more morons breed.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The idiocracy factor kicks in, and so smart... It is... Look, I'm not trying to be pretentious or say that, like, the people in this room are smarter than, you know, everybody else. I'm just saying, because it's not really just us. I mean, it is the audience, too. We always go on and on about how we get the smartest audience, and the talk radio audience, there are studies about this. The talk radio audience is typically smarter than the average person. But I'd be willing to bet that if you canvassed, certainly, this room or this audience in general, and then you compared it to, oh, I don't know, the KGON audience, I'm guessing there's like five times as many, or the Charlie audience. How many kids do you suppose the Charlie audience has? I mean, that the kids in the Charlie audience, I mean, it's probably increasing exponentially. It's like a geometric expansion of familyhood. Stupid people just breed like flies, just like roaches. What am I doing? I'm reasonably intelligent, so am I setting fire to something? Or am I having my eyeball sucked out by the pool filter? No, I'm not doing any of those things. I'm sitting on my sofa, watching television, eating some Doritos. Meanwhile, every time I go up to the kitchen, I just see red flashing lights and I hear sirens as they go try to rescue some moron whose pants have been set ablaze because he decided to stuff his pockets with fireworks and then his friend shot Roman candles at him. I mean, it's just... It's wonderful. It really is. All right, what are we doing here? Hi, Steve. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Best show ever.
Thank you, sir.
Next July 5th, you should just open the show with a Darwin Watch opening.
and then close the show with the Darwin Watch closed.
No, it's true, because it really is. The whole day after the 4th of July is just one big cavalcade of idiots who've been killed through their own stupidity, often killing others in the process.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so about the shooting of the guns up in the air.
Yes.
About 10 years ago in Longview, some guy was on a lawn chair at the festivities downtown, and a bullet out of nowhere just came and plunked him in the head and killed him dead.
Okay. Well, all right then.
They found the guy that was out in his backyard shooting a gun up into the air and tracked it back to him. So,
all right. Excellent.
You know, there's no statute of limitations on murder.
No, and it's too bad that stupidity isn't painful, by the way. So, all right. Well, thank you, my friend.
On who's the at the business end of that stick, I guess.
I guess. There you go. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
That's Steve. There you go. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, a grandmother was thrilled to win second prize in a baking contest until she found out her cake was the only entry. Jennifer Brown was awarded second place for her Victoria sponge cake. She was intrigued to find out which cake had beaten her to the top spot, then discovered the astonishing truth. Organizers spotted her sponge cake in the oven and decided, well, it wasn't up to the standards demanded for first place.
She got second place and was the only entry.
Yeah. When a friend of mine told me I had come in second, I was quite pleased. The cake hadn't been judged good enough to win the contest, but it was soon polished off and there were no complaints.
Oh, that's wonderful. Ah, fantastic. You know, these days make me glad to be alive. Hi, Jeff, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
So, I went to high school with this real A.
When you say an A, is this an ass?
Yes, an ass. I was trying to be nice.
He wasn't a partial ass. He was a whole ass.
He was the entire ass.
Okay.
An ass in its entirety. He was, you know, unlike, you know, like Ben Affleck's parents type of thing on South Park there.
Yes.
Anyway, he was the kid who was always, you know, giving people the finger when a picture was taken.
Yeah. I know that guy. Yeah.
So, anyway, the year of graduation, that July 5th, he's on the front page of the paper. In the hospital, he has clean blown off the middle finger with an M80 because he didn't throw it. It lit and then blew off the middle finger.
Oh, that's great.
That is where I learned, that, you know, right after graduation, that July 5th, that the universe does equal itself. It will even things out for people along the way.
No, it's like the guy, it's like Lester Bang says to the kid in Almost Famous. When he's talking about how the kid says, you know, that everybody at his school hates him, and Lester Bang says, you know what, you'll meet them again in their long journey to the middle. That's where all those people end up. I love that, the idea he's always giving the finger to people.
Giving the finger. You were taking video at a game or something like that or whatever, and you'd always see him, and he would just, the camera would come around, and then bam, the finger. And it's like, you know what, M80, bam, there's your finger.
Genius. God bless you, sir.
Thank you.
You call us anytime. How about this one, Rick? Hey, by the way, Oregon statehood, 1859. Listen to this. I was born here in 1959, and Oregon passed a law for the year saying all men had to grow a beard. Really? That's weird. Anyway, he says, P.S., last night I was driving by, I was driving by Southeast 104th and Holgate. The poor kids didn't have fireworks, so they set the field next to the apartments on fire. They were standing
making their own fun.
They were standing in a circle around it enjoying the 4th. Signed, I love Southeast Portland. Well, you know, one must overcome one's obstacles. Okay. Do we have more of these stories?
That's it for now.
All right.
You might have a little more later.
Yeah, we do have that truly horrifying story about the swimming pool coming up later. It really is off-putting. I mean, it's bad, and to be fair, the story coming up later about the swimming pool, I believe, it is not the fault of this poor girl who's in the story. I believe it is probably, it seems like it might be the fault of whoever designed the swimming pool. Those of you who are readers of Chuck Palahniuk's short fiction will know what I'm talking about. It's 503-733-2970. Well, let's get a couple of these, and then we'll break and come back with more. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, sir. Hello.
Hi, I'm calling actually about bullets fired off.
Okay.
You actually referencing the show many times yesterday. Mythbusters did a thing about this a while back.
Mm-hmm.
They determined that if bullets fired straight up in the air, that it won't come down with lethal force. It'll just sort of tumble to the ground. And if it's fired at an angle and it maintains its trajectory, it can actually kill someone, though.
Really? So the key, if you're firing, attention Southeast Portland, if you're going to be firing guns into the air, the key is to fire straight up.
Yeah, no, no. See, that's the thing, though, is if you fire at an angle, it'll go for like a mile and kill someone nowhere near you.
Well, there you go. So it all works itself out.
Yeah,
so,
that's free.
So there, so it's like a free pass.
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye now. All right. It's like that Twilight Zone where that guy comes and he gives the woman a box with a big red button inside. He says, you press this button, you'll get $1 million, and someone you don't know will die. Hi, Greg. You're the
everyone, Shani the Toad.
Hello. Okay. Thanks, you. Thanks so much.
That guy held for like 40 minutes to
seriously.
Do that?
Seriously. Yes, and it's never going to make the air. Impress your girlfriend some other way. It's 503-733-2970. What?
Oh, no, I didn't even understand what they said.
No, now no one else will. In your face. All right, well, we should take a break here. We'll come back. More from Tim Riley around the corner later on. CNN Radio correspondent Jim Rupert about Al Gore's son. And we'll do Transformers notes as well from the Transformers film last night. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. This is fantastic. What song is this? Do you even know what song this is? I only just know this is that really loud bump we have.
The deafening one?
The deafening rock bump. Somebody sent me this. If you go to YouTube and put in fireworks accident, there are 214 results. Now, the problem is, I would have to screen all of these before we play them, because undoubtedly any number of them are filled with dudes going, oh, F! You know, when some, like when their genitals catch on fire.
They're probably staged.
Yeah, probably.
In an effort to lose limbs on camera. Just for fun.
Try to get some money out of a show with Adam Carolla doing voiceover. All right. Here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, as a stabbing victim, LaShondra Calloway, lied dying on the floor of a convenience store in Wichita, five shoppers, including one who stopped to take a picture of her with a cell phone, stepped over the woman's body.
That's America's heartland right there, Tim. That's God's country.
Mm-hmm. Salt of the earth.
It was tragic to watch, said a police spokesman. The fact that people are interested in taking a picture with a cell phone and shopping for snacks while an innocent dying woman was lying on the floor.
I'd love to help you, but these Slim Jims are on sale.
She later died at the hospital. Two suspects have been arrested.
What was she dying of?
A stab wounds.
Really? Oh, so it wasn't like she was just... Like you couldn't have just sort of thought she was sleeping or something. Like you,
no.
I was sort of thinking it was like maybe she was sleeping there or laying there, and people thought, well, she's homeless and she's just crashed out. She was bleeding to death on the floor.
Right, she was stabbed during an altercation.
Okay,
that's that. Another cheerful holiday story.
All right, there you go. That's part of American culture right there.
Time for a Gore Watch.
Here's your a Gore Watch for whatever they have for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Show. We gotta update this. We can probably do something better than this by now.
I would think so.
Because he does sort of have a personality now.
So this is almost fast and endless. There's a lot about Al Gore. Al Gore said he has fallen out of love with politics and has no intention of running for public office again. The main reason is I'm involved with a different kind of campaign to try to raise awareness of what I truly believe is the most serious crisis our civilization has ever faced. But asked why he won't run for president again, when presumably a president could shape an agenda and fight global warming, Gore said those in power must have the support of the people to make it work. The key players are the American people. When the American people have the awareness of what it means for their children, for their grandchildren, all of civilization, they will demand that whoever's running for office, whoever is elected to serve, will respond to this. So that's that. According to a CNN poll, Gore is the choice of 16% of Democratic voters, putting him in third place behind Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
The thing is, the reason Gore, I don't think, would ever win at this point. Because, I think anybody who votes for Gore at this point would be doing so for one of two reasons. One, because they're huge on the environment. And I just don't think the environment is a big enough issue for most people. I'm not saying people don't care about the environment. I mean, I think many people do. But I don't think for most people it's the deciding issue. I think for most people right now, the deciding issue is either the war or it's taxes or it's health care. It's one of those big three. I don't think that the environment is a voting issue at this point, except for like that 15% of the population. And the other people who'd vote for Gore would just be doing it in a fit of pique because they're still pissed off about 2000. So that's it. I don't really know that there's any real compelling reason to vote for Al Gore, except for the fact that he just is sort of non-threatening and doesn't really have any big visible flaws. So other than that, I mean, there's really that. Why would you possibly vote for that guy?
He has refused to endorse any candidates, saying the election is 500 days away.
Oh, you know why too? You know he won't endorse Hillary because there's that whole rift between him and Clinton over the 2000 election. That's probably what that's all about.
It was on the Today Show today to discuss Saturday's Live Earth concerts, which will be broadcast on NBC. He talked about what these concerts will be all about.
It's an SOS, a wake-up call to the entire world, and it will launch a three-year global campaign to get the facts out to everybody.
There we go. That's it. That's all the sound time he gets. And you're done.
He states what he wants of those who attend this weekend's concerts.
Take a seven-point pledge that is designed to change behavior and also to put pressure on political leaders in every country across the ideological spectrum. We really have to solve this.
All right. Well, so let's talk about the momentum kill. Listen to that. How he just totally killed the inertia of the show.
Well, we're stopping to reflect.
In like 5 seconds, he just deflated all of the energy in the room. Thanks, Al. What is the seven-point pledge? Does anybody know?
I don't know.
Let me Google it right now. Maybe some kinetic energy will wake me up. Seven-point pledge. Maybe if I do some jumping jacks, I'll be awake again.
That'll be terrific.
Or the seven-point pledge. Here we go. This is from some environmental nutcase magazine. Let's see. The seven-point pledge announced by Al Gore to rally support against global warming. Am I really reading this as show material?
Yes.
I pledge. One. I want to yawn again already. I want to...
Sorry?
All right. One. To demand that my country join an international treaty within the next 2 years that cuts global warming by 90% in developed countries, and blah, blah, blah. Next generation inherit a healthy earth. Okay.
Well, that's a good goal.
Sure.
What are the other ones?
Two. To take personal action to solve the climate crises by reducing my own CO2 pollution. And CO2 is what? Carbon? That's carbon
dioxide.
Dioxide, right?
Dioxide monoxide.
No, I think that's carbon. I think that's carbon dioxide. We're such idiots. I think that's just carbon dioxide. I think carbon monoxide is CO1, isn't it?
Could be.
We're clearly the people to be tackling this issue. Reducing my own CO2.
We're making the world a better place to live.
Well, if O2 is oxygen, CO2... Oh, God, I know I'm horrifying everybody in the audience with my complete lack of knowledge about this. And I was going on and on about that Brady Bunch episode earlier with, like, intricate detail. CO2, I think, is carbon dioxide. I thought we needed that. I thought trees needed carbon dioxide.
Al Gore doesn't want any more of that.
I don't know. I don't want trees to have... I don't want your life! As much as I can, and offsetting the rest to become carbon neutral. Three... To fight for a moratorium on the construction of new generating facility, of any new generating facility that burns coal. Whatever. Blah. Six, to plant new trees. Seven, okay, I'm done. I don't care. Here's something I care about. A guy has an answer to this question with. Hello, sir, you know the name of that music bed we were just playing?
I don't know the name of the song, but I know that it's Fall Out Boy that plays the song.
Really? Where on earth would I have gotten a Fall Out Boy song?
I don't know.
That's kind of strange. Well, I have to look deep within my own soul tonight and ask myself how that it is that ended up on the show. Oh, wait, okay, apparently this guy said here, the name of the song is... Oh, this is... It's a kooky song title from an emo band. The name of the song is... Our lawyers made us change the name of the song so we wouldn't get sued. By Fall Out Boy, it's off Under the Cork Tree. Oh, I'm sorry. The guy says, from Under the Cork Tree, which is awesome, says this emailer. All right, thank you. All right, and thank you, sir.
No problem.
All right, there you go. They were just here. By the way, in case... Now, look, I don't want to be just some trendy guy making fun of Fall Out Boy, because everybody does that, and I know that I know that the kids love them, and it really is the kids who love them at this point, and this guy, Hank, who emailed me.
And Kiki.
Here's how you know, and I will acknowledge, here's a couple of things about Fall Out Boy, and then we'll resume the news. I just got to talk about something pop culture-oriented, wake myself up, because Al Gore has put me just into this somnambulistic stupor. Good God. I feel like I had to do calisthenics or something. Couple things about Fall Out Boy. A, Tim's still yawning. Al Gore has sapped your will to live. Couple things about Fall Out Boy. A, I do acknowledge that they have really pretty melodies, and that the guy who sings for them, I don't know his name, but that guy who sings for Fall Out Boy has a great voice and really is underrated. Because he's the one who writes the melodies for the songs, and he's the one who sings. And I like to see a fat guy rocking, by the way. I like to see a fat guy in a rock band. That's always great. Fat guy with bad hair, you know, right out front. Probably gets tons of chicks. Second, and he gets overlooked because everybody fixates on Pete, what's his name? Pete Wentz. Who sits there and, like, writes a lot of Cutter poetry.
And sleeps with Ashley Simpson.
And sleeps and takes pictures of his weenus and puts it on the internet. So I will make this final observation about Fall Out Boy. Here's how you know that they're not really a rock. It's like when My Chemical Romance was here, and there was like the least metal moment ever when the lead singer was blowing kisses to the road crew, and I was like, that's the least metal moment.
That was awful.
It's the least rock moment in the history of the world. Here's a slightly more rock moment, but it's still very, very. Very, very lame. Fall Out Boy was here last week, and I know that because Susan Reynolds' daughter went to go see them. Guess what time the Fall Out Boy concert started? 5 p.m.
Are you? That's why they were gone so early, because I thought maybe they had skipped the show, because Kiki called me. She's like, oh, you want to meet up? And it was
5
like
o'clock. Kind of a rock concert starts at 5 in the afternoon at the Rose Garden. Doesn't make any sense at all.
Disney concerts.
So that's exactly what I'm saying. That is summed up perfectly, Tim Riley. That's exactly what it is. All right. Here's Tim Riley. Let's talk about something other than Al Gore.
Well, let's talk about Al Gore's son.
Okay.
Arrested in Orange County with a trunk full of drugs.
Yeah.
Father Gore says he doesn't have very much to say about it right now.
We're dealing with it as a private family matter, and we love him very much.
Don't ask me any questions.
We're glad that he's safe and that he's getting treatment, and we're going to leave it as a private matter.
He was safe and very happy, apparently. The list of drugs. Do you have a list of the drugs?
I do. Vicodin, Valium, Xanax, Soma, Adderall, an amphetamine, which is used to treat attention deficit disorder. They also found some marijuana.
So, I mean, really, it seems obvious to me that the Adderall was there just to counterbalance the effects of all the others, because the others are all just, they're all happy sleepy time drugs. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well done. Well done, Al Gore. And wasn't Al Gore the second pulled over here for speeding? Somebody pointed that out to me, that Al Gore the III, where was he pulled over?
Orange County.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But Al Gore the II, I think, was pulled over on the coast here.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was going like 120 miles an hour or something. The Gores need to stay out of... People need to hire drivers. I mean, do you realize how many celebrity scandals wouldn't happen if they just hire a freaking driver?
I'd like a driver.
Me too. Let's put that in a... Next time we have a negotiation with CBS, let's all demand drivers. Hi, you have an Al Gore comment, sir or madam. Hey.
Yeah, it's Julia the Job Shadower.
Julia the Joey, long time no talk. How are things, sister?
It's all right, not too bad.
What's up with your Al Gore comment here?
Oh, I was going to tell you about how that whole carbon dioxide in the air thing works out for us badly.
What is this? What is CO2?
CO2 is carbon dioxide, hence carbon to oxygen. So carbon dioxide.
She says, as though speaking to a slightly slow child.
No.
All right. Okay.
And? So, when more of that collects in part of the atmosphere, then the sun comes in, and normally most of it will go back out. You know, some bounces, but with this whole layer of CO2, unfortunately what happens is it all collects, and that's why we get all the polar ice caps melting and polar bears dying and us having extremely 100-degree summers and all that jazz. You know?
All right. So we're all going to die.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. Okay. Well, that's kind of the bottom line of all these things.
I would like
the
polar bears to live, though.
I know.
I don't care
too.
About people, really.
No, it's, you know, I was just watching this, one of these, there's that show, that documentary on the BBC or something, it's just called Earth, and it's like a 7-part series, and it's narrated by Sigourney Weaver. And every time they want to do anything to make any sort of global warming point, they just go right to the polar bears.
Yeah.
They go right to the polar bears because they know that that's like the weak. We're like the dragon smog. We have the weak chink in our armor. That's the, you know, it's like they seem to be manipulated easily with images of cuddly polar bears. And
yeah.
So that's exactly how they do it.
Cuddly white animals that play in snow. How can you not feel sad for that?
Totally, it's true. Where will we get Coca-Cola commercials from? Yeah. Thank you, Julia.
Bye.
All right. When I would see Nancy Drew with my wife, they were showing I had to sit through a bunch of insufferable trailers, including one. Oh my God! Let me just tell you about a trailer that probably no one in this room has seen because you haven't gone to see Nancy Drew or any other movie that is aimed towards the younger set. Let me tell you about a trailer, the worst trailer for probably the worst movie ever made, and that is the sequel to Daddy Daycare, Daddy Daycare 2. Who was in Daddy Daycare 1? It was Eddie Murphy, right? It was Eddie Murphy and somebody else? Wasn't like Eddie Murphy and white comic foil?
I have no idea.
Come on now. Daddy Daycare.
I don't know.
Daddy Daycare, I think. Who's the King of Queens guy? Kevin James? Who's the big fat guy? He has the hot wife on King of Queens.
Well, I know he's a big fat guy.
No, but I mean, I know I don't narrow it down by saying he was a fat guy with a hot wife. That's what all those shows are. I think it's Kevin James is his name. But it was like him and Eddie Murphy. And they were, you know, they were unemployed or whatever and needed quick cash to do something.
Steve Zahn was in it?
Maybe. But it was Daddy Daycare. Anyway, so I saw the trailer for Daddy Daycare 2 where they couldn't get any of the original actors back. And so it's like other random black guy, other random white sidekick. And then it's like them at a summer camp for, like, a bunch of freaky, you know, misfit kids or whatever. And
it's exactly
just
like Cruel Intentions 2.
Oh, God.
They tried to make the second one. It was absolutely nobody.
Cruel Intentions
the first
2 is hot as balls, though. There's that whole sequence where the twins are making out in the shower. Come on. You can't front on that.
That's just wrong.
It's on YouTube right now. You can watch it. Anyway, but Daddy Daycare 2, and it was like I could feel myself getting stupider just watching it. Just watching the trailer, I could feel my brain turning into mush. But there was a trailer for the follow-up to March of the Penguins, all about polar bears. Narrated sassily by Queen Latifah.
She annoys me.
Oh, man. I don't know when it is that Queen Latifah, I mean, look, I don't have anything wrong. I don't have anything against Queen Latifah. She's never done anything to me. And she was great in that Set It Off film. She narrates this, she's narrating the polar, and here's the thing, is that Queen Latifah, I've seen, you know, not like I'm some Queen Latifah expert, but I've seen, you know, I've seen a lot of interviews with her, and I've seen her do things, I've seen her in various roles and whatever, and, you know, there's no way to say this without sounding like, what's his name, Joe Biden, but I'll say, she does seem like, you know, an educated, reasonably intelligent person. She's narrating the polar bear movie. And suddenly it's a whole lot of, but Mama Polar Bear done ain't having none of that, you know, or whatever. And I'm just cringing in my seat because it just seems so fake. It just seems like such a put on sort of patois that she's speaking with. And even thinking about it just makes my skin crawl. Looks so terrible.
What was that last movie she was in with Will Ferrell?
No, not Will Ferrell. You're thinking of Taxi or The Cab Driver with Jimmy, what's his name?
No, I'm thinking of Will Ferrell, the one where she's, where Emma Watson's writing the story.
Stranger Than Fiction, but I haven't seen it yet. I'm watching that this week. I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
Yeah, Queen Latifah's in it. It's a very good movie. I really, really liked it.
Is she terrible?
No, she has a small part. That's what I'm saying. She didn't really bother me because she's, you know, kind of sassy, but it's very contained.
Kept away. Her sassiness was quarantined. Mm-hmm. All right, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Oh, I just hit something that didn't work. Okay, here we go. A new study finds men chatter just as much as women do. In a research published in the journal Science, men and women were both found to use an average of 16,000 words a day. A psychologist from the University of Arizona who led the study said the research challenges the notions that women just talk all the time. He says the science shows the idea that women have a bigger vocabulary than men are false.
Whoever thought that that was true?
I don't know.
I mean, no offense. I'm just saying, I'm not saying that women have a small, I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm just saying, was that ever thought to be the case, that women somehow had a bigger vocabulary? I never thought that one gender or the other had a monopoly on words. That seems like one of those facts that they've disproven that no one ever really thought about to begin with. But women do talk. I thought it was a scientific fact that women talked more. Because it seems like male conversations are typically shorter.
Yes.
Like, I hate to generalize, but you know that this is typically true, that, like, if a guy leaves you a voicemail, mm-hmm. it's a lot of, like, hey, it's Ted, call me back. You know, whereas if a woman leaves you a voicemail, goddamn, it's like it's on and on and freaking on. That is one of those great features on the iPhone where you can see how long the voicemail is before you even listen to it, decide if you even care. All right.
No, it's happened to me recently. A woman called me up and said she drove through a house. And...
and so anyway, I was having a bagel this morning, but they were out of the regular flavor bagel. And so I got the blueberry, and there's this guy behind the counter named Jeff, and he always gives me extra cream cheese. And so I got the cream cheese, but then I got this orange juice. And you know how sometimes when you have one thing that's sugary and then you have another thing that's sugary, it's like they cancel each other out. So I had a sip of the orange juice, and then I said to go back in and get some water. And I got that that Pellegrino water, because the other kind is great, and I guess it's good for the environment. But then it's in plastic bottles. So I don't understand how water that's good for the environment can be in a plastic bottle and still be good for you. So I got the Pellegrino. And
I just tuned out like 10 minutes ago. How can you keep going like
that?
Welcome
to the world of every man. That's all I'm saying. All right, here's Tim Ryan.
Residents of Los Angeles are reacting to the mayor's pending divorce and his admission that he is seeing NBC Telemundo news babe.
Seeing her vagina.
Mathala Salinas. Most of these people sympathize with the mayor's estranged wife.
I'm very disappointed. He's a human being, but he let a lot of people down.
These men stand as an example. Really doesn't set a good standard for the following generation.
If she would keep her man happy and satisfied, he would never think about going elsewhere to find satisfaction.
If a man can't run his family, how can he expect to run a
great. See, if he was getting his medicine at home, he would not need this. That is fantastic. Who says that? That's so great.
People of Los Angeles.
And by the way, that from that first woman they talked to there, he's just an example. Who really is, who was looking up to politicians as an example of moral righteousness to begin with? Oh, this shatters my whole world. I thought politicians were moral bellwethers. I can't go on. Oh, by the way, Aaron has clarified this. Daddy Daycare, too. He says, it doesn't star just anyone. It stars the one and only, I forgot about this, talk about a guy who has become so unbelievably pointless and irrelevant to all of us here that I completely just forgot who he was. It's the one and only Cuba Gooding Jr. That's right, it is him. Academy Award winning Cuba Gooding Jr. That guy won an Oscar. He is now in Daddy Daycare 2.
That's too bad.
How long before Ice Cube starts his kindergarten daddy? Well, Ice Cube at least... he sort of seems to have a self-awareness when he makes those terrible family movies. Ice Cube, you can sense that it's a whole lot of, that he's deliberately positioning himself as a very mainstream performer who can get work in any way. He can do Three Kings, but he can also do, you know, Are We There Yet, or whatever. He's deliberate. Cuba Gooding Jr., you just get the feeling that he's just fallen off the earth, and no one will hire him for anything else anymore. Yet him and Marissa Tomei are in those movies together. We won Oscars! Come on! Here's Tim Riley.
Well, Hillary Clinton is getting the support of a former U.S. congressman from St. Louis. So that pretty much tips the election in her favor because Dick Gephardt announced he's endorsing Hillary Clinton for president.
Bam.
Our country is in as much difficulty as it's ever been in a number of important areas. If we ever needed a president who from day one, because of their experience and depth of character, could grapple with all these problems, it is now. And I just think Hillary is the one that can do this the best.
Well, with this endorsement, how can she go wrong?
Fireball of oratorial skill he is.
So Joe Lieberman, who was Al Gore's running mate last time around, well, in 2000, said he is not ruling out endorsing a Republican seeking the Oval Office.
I'm not going to get involved until after both parties have their presumptive nominees, and frankly, to see whether there's a strong independent candidate.
Huh?
Nobody pays any attention.
No, I'm sorry. I was, you know what I was just now? I wasn't even reading anything. I was staring blankly at a piece of dust on the counter. You're playing the Joe Lieberman clip, and I was just looking at the speck of dust, wondering if I should reach over and flick it away onto the floor.
Dust in the wind.
that's what the Joe Lieberman trade. They ought to use him for one of those like stop smoking hypnosis tapes or something. You put that thing on, and man, you're suddenly in your own little REM cycle. All right.
Australia's defense minister Brandon Nelson has admitted securing oil supplies is the key reason for Australian troops being in Iraq.
Many of the key strategic trends I have mentioned, including terrorism and extremism, challenging demographics, WMD aspirations, energy demand, and great power competition converge in the Middle East.
I have a cunning plan, Mr. Blackadder.
The 4th of July is over, and although fireworks are illegal in Los Angeles and many Southern California cities, you never know it. According to the L.A. Times, many illegal fireworks have made neighborhoods last night sound like war zones.
Yeah, I'm sure it's the fireworks that did that. Yeah.
Apparently, also the Nevada town of Pahrump had problems. The desert town, the home of Art Bell, is home to three huge fireworks supermarkets, packed with everything from 50-cent firecrackers to suitcase-sized items worth thousands of dollars. So far this year, authorities have seized about 30 tons of illegal fireworks in Southern California. And they'll seize twice that amount by the end of the year.
Fantastic. Oh, did we ever do that story about the fireworks factory that exploded?
Yeah, we did that yesterday.
Did we? I don't remember that.
Yeah, we did.
Where was that at?
That was in India.
All right. Boy, that's got to be the most nerve-wracking job. Where do you work? I work in a fireworks warehouse. That's just got to be the most unnerving job to have. That's, I mean, just because you know at any, I mean, at any given time, that's, you know, you're like one guy disregarding the smoking sign, you know, away from just a real bad way to go out. Hey, do we have any updates? Somebody asked me this right now. Do we have any updates on the priest and the blonde and the car and the whatever?
They're dead.
And there you go. And we're done. All right. So I guess not.
We're still looking for that fellow who made the phone call.
But they're never going to find him, right? No. We already, and did they say... Did they say why they're looking for the guy? Did they tip their hand at all about why it is that they're searching for him?
They did not, no.
All right. And the phone booth is gone.
Phone booth has got the jerky factory. Right. And for your own safety, it should
be known.
So now
there's no way to tell anybody if you witness
an
accident.
There's no
way
to communicate with the outside world if you're going to the coast.
So now if you're bleeding to death out there and someone sees you, it doesn't really matter because they won't be able to summon the authorities. Nope. And if they do try to summon the authorities, rather than coming to your aid, will squabble for 6 weeks over whose job it is to come poking around in the shrubs for your bloated corpse.
Highway 26 to the coast is our own little Donner Pass.
It really is true. Kind of an abandon all hope. Ye who enter here kind of a thing. Here there be dragons. All right, let's do a couple more here, then we'll break, and we'll come back with James Roop and Transformers notes.
A child wrestles a fox to save others. A rabid fox proved to be no match for a 5-year-old North Carolina boy. The boy wrestled with the wild animal and pinned it to the ground, allowing 6 other children to run to safety. It took place in the front yard of the boy's Kingstown, North Carolina home as the fox intruded on a Sunday cookout. Although he was bitten on the leg, Rayshon McDonald was able to hold the fox down for more than a minute until others came for help. His stepfather, who was in a cast with a broken leg, struck the animal with one of his crutches. A neighbor even fired shots from a handgun, but that fox wouldn't quit. It wasn't until the stepfather hit the stubborn animal in the head with a stick that the fox finally stopped breathing.
That's a happy ending. And then the animal was dead. Okay.
I've been saving... Maybe I should say this one for later.
What is it? Is it the swimming pool?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't heard this.
Oh, it's so horrible. And it's like a child, and it clearly wasn't her fault. It seems to be the fault of whoever designed this swimming pool. Let me ask you this, Sarah. Let's just do a little Q&A before Tim reads this.
Okay.
What's the most dangerous thing in a swimming pool?
Diving board?
No.
The bottom of it? Out of the edges? Dangerous thing, drowning?
No, you're going the wrong way here. You're cold. You're
a fox.
You ever? it's filled with rabid weasels. No. You're hot and cold. You're no. Let's play hot and cold here. No. You're.
I have no context to put it in. I don't know what happened with the pool.
That's what I'm saying.
The structure of the pool, or what?
Well, let's stop.
Let's stop
and get a hold of ourselves here. Okay. There's the diving board. Now let's just do it this way. Let's list all the things that could happen to you. You could slip on the diving board. And injure your leg or something, or your whatever.
Have a cramp and drown.
You could have it.
Wait for
now, enough. Does that really happen?
I don't know.
That's a
fake
thing. What a cramp and drown.
Like not using a cell phone on an airplane.
See, I got a cramp in my leg. Don't be a pussy. Just swim anyway. Come on, seriously. Be a man. That never happens. That's like you don't swim for 30 minutes after you eat. That's a bunch of crap. I say getting strangely angry about it.
So
screw that!
Make sure you go swimming right now after you're finishing that.
Have dozens of pounds of spaghetti and then go swimming. I'm just saying, given the choice between, oh, my leg hurts and I'm going to drown, it seems like you just swim with the cramp and, you know, complain about it later. All right, what else could hurt you in a pool? You could jump up a diving board, hit your head at the bottom of the pool. We were always told about that because we had an above-ground pool it wasn't like real shallow, but it was only like 5 feet. Clearly not diving depth. And my mom was like, don't dive, you know. And our neighbors, my dad and our neighbors, our fully grown neighbors would get really drunk and they would dive anyway. And they would into a 5 foot pool. It's just amazing that anybody in my family is alive.
Smoking a Marlboro.
Smoking a Marlboro and holding like a bottle of beer in the other hand. My dad would do this thing of like running, because there was a big, not a diving board, but a big sort of like platform that like took that you could use to get into the pool. And my dad would run, and then he would jump and sort of do a somersault in the air, banking only on his own acrobatic skills to keep his neck from snapping like a dry twig on the Serengeti plain when he hit the bottom. Amazingly enough, didn't die from that. Let's see, what else is there? Well, you could drown if you were drinking or otherwise discombobulated. You could cut yourself maybe on the edge of the pool. What else is in a swimming pool that might be dangerous?
The ladder?
Ladder, yes. You could cut yourself or become entangled in the ladder.
In the swimming pool?
In the swimming pool.
The steps?
No.
The drain?
Let's say, yes. There you go. Now you're thinking. Now, what could happen to you with... What do you suppose could happen to you with the drain that sucks the water in?
Oh, no, no, no. Somebody's hair getting caught in there?
No. If only it were the hair. Is she alive?
No, let me look here. I want to make sure.
I believe she's alive in the
hospital.
She's alive, but probably wishing
she's improving.
The bar is set so low for this girl to improve, by the way. I don't want you to think we're making light of what happened to this poor girl. I'm really not. I'm just saying
it's a caution to other children.
It is, and to whoever made this pool,
it's
by the way.
Service.
Smell that lawsuit coming your way. I'm just saying, watch your... For the love of God, and people can tell me all the time that I am not qualified to tell them how to raise their children because I don't have kids of my own. But you know what? F that. If you're a parent, try to keep an eye on your kids. Just do all of us a favor. Just keep an eye on them.
Give them some fireworks.
Seriously. Put them in a closet with a match. It's not the hair. It's so much worse. And it's not even, when I was a kid, we were always afraid of the eye.
It would have worked its way up to the hair.
No,
I never even thought about that.
No,
thanks for the new fear.
No. You weren't afraid of it now, but you weren't afraid of it before, but now you will be. No, when I was a kid, I was at a pool. I'll never forget this. I was at a swimming pool one time, like at a Motel 6 or a Hotel Inn or something, or a Holiday Inn. Because my dad was in the Knights of Columbus, and we would have to travel all over the goddamn country for these Knights of Columbus conventions. Which was kind of cool as a kid because I had to stay in a lot of hotels, which is one of the reasons why to this day I love hotels. They're fantastic. But there was this one swimming pool where, like, the grate had come off the intake suction thing. And I remember having, like, the clearest recollection that if I was an idiot kid who decided to do it, like, I wonder what it looks like inside this suction pipe. Like, it would have taken my eye clean out of the socket.
Okay.
It would have pulled my eye clean out.
Oh, stop saying that.
No, it's true. Right out.
Say it again.
My eye clean out of the socket, Sarah.
Oh.
All right, go ahead and keep in mind this is a terrifying story and it's awful and we do wish this girl...
Not for children.
No, we do...
So if they're listening right now...
If children are listening now, you may want to turn down the radio. Have
to
leave the room. It's an awful story. We are not making light of what happened to the girl, but I am saying this is the only reason that this is so sort of perversely fascinating is because this is something, a fear that has always lurked in the bottom of my mind and to see that it has actually happened to someone... is both terrifying and fascinating. So to see that this fear, which I have always sort of had, this is a low-grade phobia of mine, and now it has actually come true. So with that, Tim Riley, take it away. Ladies, this really is the second worst story you've ever heard. Take it away, Tim.
From WCCO in Minneapolis comes word, a CBS station, a 6-year-old Adina, Minnesota girl, has been hospitalized after a horrific accident in a swimming pool. Abigail Taylor was severely injured when she sat over an open drain hole in a wading pool at the Minneapolis Golf Club. Now, Abigail's father has a warning to other families. Pool and hot tub drain accidents are a hidden danger that many of us don't understand. You see, Abigail has big brown eyes, a dazzling smile, and at just 6 years old, she has already competed in local swim meets. Oh, she loves to swim, says her dad.
I'm so nervous.
She loved to swim.
Her love of swimming is why her family didn't think twice when she played in a kiddie pool at the family's golf club. Yeah. Well, when Abigail was getting out of the pool, she fell. She more or less blacked out. She passed out, fell face first onto the pool decking. The family thought it was a seizure. An ambulance rushed her to Children's Hospital in Minneapolis. Several hours later, a surgeon said Abigail is lucky to be alive.
I have to.
Oh, God,
would you prefer that I read it?
I'll do it.
All right.
It's part of my job.
You are a newsman, Tim.
Okay, here we go.
Play through the pain.
Oh. I'm going to read this quickly. The suction had caused a 2-inch tear in her rectum and had basically disemboweled her by pulling out her small intestines, almost all of it.
Oh, my God.
Her father said a search of the pool filter turned up Abigail's intestine. Abigail was seriously wounded because the cover of the drain had been removed. In most public pools, the drain cover is screwed and cannot be pulled off. According to the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Pueblo, Colorado, the pressure on some pool drains can be as strong as 300 pounds per square inch. It never even crosses anyone's mind that the potential at the bottom of the pool is enough force to literally disembowel a child or an adult. Abigail will have to be fed intravenously for the rest of her life and will have to have a colostomy bag.
Rectum.
She is improving. She asked, am I going to be on the news? Why do you ask, she said. Because I want to make sure this doesn't happen to anyone else, says the brave girl.
So,
since 1990, 170 people, mostly children, have been caught in drains.
So, there you go. Don't.
By the way, most pools have a safety cutoff bell that shuts down if somebody is trapped. The new drain covers cost less than $50.
So, there you go.
I think I'll throw this story away so it cannot be read again by anybody.
Why don't we shred that story? That's, and again, that is a low-grade phobia I have always had about the pool drain or the pool suction thing. Like seriously, like pulling out your eye or some other section
again.
Of your... Yeah, well, there you go.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the worst thing ever.
Wait, was it the one in the bottom of the pool?
Yeah. I believe so, yes. Mm. The worst part is the searching of the drain turned up her intestines. That's the worst. That's the worst line
How
of the story.
How is that even that possible?
Well, you saw it, Omzi. Those are, it's a whole lot of, By the way, you're listening to KCMD Portland, Oregon. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
That sucks. So she's never able to eat again? Ever?
No.
No. No, there'll be no eating for Abigail.
Hmm. Okay, kids, you can turn your radios back on again. Roll down.
Hey, this is Jim Roop. Hi, Jim Roop, how are you, sir?
Why, I'm fine, thank you very much.
How's life? How are things where you are?
It's hot.
I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at you. It's just so awkward. We just read, which I will not repeat, we just read the worst story in the history of the world.
I heard you guys when I was on
the Yeah,
hold.
There's just no way to, there's really no way to smoothly segue into anything else. So let's just take a, we're going to take a little moment here. We'll stay right here, but we're just going to take a little moment and we're just going to, We really need some soothing music. We need some sort of moment of zen meditation music or something we can play here to sort of cleanse unpleasant images out of our minds. Good God Almighty. All right. How was your 4th of July, sir?
It was action-packed. After I hung up with you, I headed down to the release of Al Gore the Third.
Oh, that's right. I have the... I'm sorry. Apparently, I didn't hear this when she said it, but a caller has... or an emailer has just pointed out that... As we revealed that story, Sarah's comment was, quote, that sucks. Did you really say that sucks?
She did say that. She said, that sucks. She's never going to eat again.
That sucks.
Yes,
it does. All right. Well, when was Al Gore's kid? Well, first of all, this sounds too good to be true. Was he, in fact, driving a hybrid filled with drugs?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
But you know what? I went to a Toyota dealership today to see if I can get one up that fast.
Yeah.
Because to me, the biggest issue with that story was the fact that he was driving a Prius at 100 miles an hour.
100 miles an hour.
Yeah. And apparently, and those things have a digital speedometer, so
right.
Really the number's infinite. And the salesman was telling me that on the Bonneville Salt Flats, they got that thing up to 130.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever driven a hybrid?
I just did today for the first time ever.
They're pretty cool, actually. I passed on buying one. My wife and I were going to buy the Honda Civic Hybrid, and I'm glad we didn't because I think they discontinued it. I don't think they make it anymore. My wife and I were going to buy a Honda Civic Hybrid, but it just, you know, it just wasn't where we needed it to be. It felt too much. It was like there were no options on it. It was very much like you had to take it stock the way that it came. You couldn't modify it at all. And I think if I'm going to lay down that much extra money on a car, especially one that conceivably I'm going to have for 10 years. I mean, I want it to be a good, I want it to be not only a hybrid, but also a good car. And it just didn't have what I needed to have to buy it to lay down the money for the new thing. But, you know, the freaky thing about those hybrids is how when you pull up to the stoplight or whatever, they're just completely dead silent.
Yeah, I kept thinking the car stalled out. I kept thinking it stalled out. I said, this is
kind of
weird.
It's kind of cool and kind of unnerving that those cars just make no noise at all. I mean, it's just unreal. So,
plus, you know, they have so many gadgets. Like the key.
Right,
you know, it's not a real key. It's one of those things where you don't even have to put this little thing in the dashboard as long as it's near it. So if you lose it, it's not like you can go down and make a spare key at the local locksmith.
You know, somebody told me this. Somebody told me that on most new cars now, if you were to take your car key down and even if it is like a mechanical, regular metal key, that it still won't start the car because there's a microchip embedded in the key. Somebody told me that about my Ford Focus. It's 2004. And they said it's a regular metal key that you put in and you turn. But they said that even so, if you were to get another one made at like the hardware store, that it still won't start the car because it's got some microchip embedded in the handle of it.
Well, not in the 2003 model cars. That's what I have.
All right. Well, so maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm sure. Maybe I've got. It's like how I have the one model year of car that, in which they to which they can't just mount an iPod. I've been trying to get a thing put in my car for the longest time, where I can just stick my wife's iPod and patch it into the stereo. You can do it in the 2000, 2002, 2003, 2005, 2006, 2007. Not the 2004. The
You're
1 year. No, I got the one model year where you can't do that.
Oh.
So in any event.
Well, to coin a phrase from Sarah, that sucks.
I've got like 9 emails on that instantly. Like, did Sarah refer to the pool suction story by saying that sucks? And then a lot of ha ha ha. The weird thing back on this Al Gore the third thing. First of all, Al Gore the second got busted for speeding through Oregon about a year ago. He was going like 120 miles an hour. So as I was saying earlier, if celebrities would just think about how many fewer stories we would have about celebrities if they just hired drivers.
True.
I mean, every celebrity who's been busted for anything in the last 6 months has been
behind the wheel.
Yeah, they just had a driver to take care of them. That's the first thing. I want a driver now, and I'm not even a real celebrity. So I just doesn't. And let me also ask you this.
But here's the best part.
Yes, go ahead.
When his sister bailed him out, I think it was his sister, when she bailed him out yesterday, she picked him up in his beautiful blue Maserati.
Really?
Oh, my. The thing was gorgeous.
Yeah, I bet that's...
And this guy got in the back seat. I would have said, put me in a driver's seat.
I bet that's environmentally friendly.
Not hardly.
Then you know, in a really perverse way, of all of this, whether it's the drugs or whether it's the speeding, you know, of all this, the Gore campaign and Gore himself are so glad that he was in a hybrid, because you and I know how the media works. That would have been the one aspect of the story that everybody glommed onto had it not been a hybrid. If you've been driving an SUV, Drudge would have run that in like 100-point type. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and then Al Gore had to cancel all of his appearances for this concert that he's doing.
Well, just because I'm sure he doesn't want to take a lot of
question.
Now he's scheduled to be on Larry King tonight.
You see, and so well, of course,
and Larry won't ask him. About
no, Larry, he asks all the hard questions there. Yeah. Do you know anything about
what color is your house?
Do you like pancakes or waffles?
Mm.
Do you
syrup or butter?
Do you sense that there's that no one cares about this series of concerts?
I sense that Rio dropped out of the mix.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Rio dropped out mainly because I think they're having some sort of
everybody's
civil strife going on.
They're busy having sex in Rio. Everybody there is too busy tanning and having sex with someone.
Well, it's like Bob Geldof and some other guys are saying, look, we all know about global warming. What's the point?
Right. Well, because especially a concert to raise money about something at least has a finite goal. This is to raise awareness. But I don't really know of anybody on Earth who hasn't heard the term global warming.
Right.
So it just seems
I don't think it's going to get the eye. Well, it might because there's some pretty good bands, I think, involved. But not any real big ones.
Right.
Well, I know that's wrong too. I think there are enough big ones to make it worth watching, but it's nothing like.
Well, let's ask the real crucial question: is U2 taking part?
I don't think so.
Well, see, there you go. When you've lost U2, you've lost the left.
At least I've not heard that they were.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I just read, and I know Tim was.
Melissa Etheridge is.
Tim, what? Well, really, realistically, what else is she going to be doing? I mean, come on, seriously. Tim pointed out that I was not aware of this because I watched the wrong music, because I spent all my time watching Metal Mania on VH1 Classic. But there just doesn't seem to be the buzz about this. Like, even that Live 8 thing, whenever that was. Was that last year?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't even know when that was. When did they do that Live 8 concert?
Wasn't that 2005 or
something? You know, I have no idea. Zero. All right. Well, whatever. All right, my friend. Are you on tomorrow?
Yeah.
All right, well, then...
You've heard something that I...
No, I always ask people that, because if not, I want to wish you an early happy, you know, a good weekend. Because, like, Elisa's not on tomorrow, so I'm going to ask her, you know, wish her a good weekend.
She's not. Where's she going?
She's off tomorrow, and then she's back Saturday.
Hey, is it true that she that she let out of the bag where her wedding was and everything, or she at least gave out the information of her website or something?
Well, she didn't... will you mind horribly if I take a five-second pause and refill my coffee cup?
Not at all.
In the meantime, while I refill my coffee cup, Jim Rupp, and then I'll answer that Lisa Goddard question, I'm going to play some music that a listener just sent me. I was saying we needed Moment of Zen music to make us happy. Here's his suggestion. Sharp-eared listeners will recognize that as being the work of Jan Hammer, and that is Sonny Crockett's theme from Miami Vice. Mm. All right, here's the thing about Lisa. So Lisa Goddard is getting married to this guy, Jason, and she's giving out his name, too, Jason Sporbert. And she said, well, you know, we've got this blog that we have, and it's got photos and a message board and everything. And she said, let me give out the web address. And we stopped her from doing it. We actually said, you know what, there's some kind of unstable people in the audience. God love them. Most of our audience is fantastic. But I said, there is that small, small slice of the audience that is ever so slightly unstable. So maybe you don't want to just give that out willy-nilly. And so we stopped her from doing that. But I will say this, that many listeners have found out that if you just sort of know how to use Google, you will find it. So if you go to her website and go to the guest book, it's funny because there's the first few entries are like friends and family saying, oh, we can't wait to come to the wedding. Congratulations. You're going to look beautiful. And then like at about April 15th or so, suddenly all the entries are like, you effing rock. You're so badass. You're hot. You know, it's a lot of all caps and a lot of references to like, you know, to like Futurama and whatnot. So it's, you know, the audience loves her from afar.
Very good.
So there you go, my friend.
She won't even give me the web address.
Oh, I'll send you the link if you want it.
Yeah.
All right, excellent, my friend. Well, enjoy the rest of your Southern California afternoon, and we will have speaks with you very soon, my friend.
Thank you.
There you go. CNN radio correspondent James Roop in Los Angeles. Yeah, this is Crockett's theme. By Jan Hammer. This is from the Miami Vice soundtrack. Our good friend Mark sent this to me. It's kind of soothing.
I like it.
Just the sort of thing you need to wash the image of a disemboweling out of your head.
Oh, man.
How horrible is that? And we warn people. I gave people many, many, many dozens of warnings about that today. Oh, there we go. And I'll, in just a second here, I'll read a couple emails and we'll break.
What are you doing?
My headphone cables are snarled. Hold on. Oh, yeah, listen to that. Picking up a little bit there. This is the music that they use whenever Sonny is like sitting there staring over, you know, he's like leaning against a railing, you know, by the water, like looking out over at night, like wearing his white suit and, you know, thinking about, you know, damn, this job takes a toll on your soul, leaves a mark on you that never comes off. It's 503, and then like having sex with some hot chick. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see, we got a couple here, and I'm just gonna read these so I can get rid of them, and we can never read that story again. Rick, this says, that story is straight out of a Chuck Palahniuk novel. Yeah, there's a Chuck Palahniuk short story called Guts, I think it's called. And I do believe that the story is about a guy who is, if I remember correctly, because I think I only read it once. I do believe the story is about a man who is attempting to pleasure himself by the use of a suction device on a swimming pool. And it all goes badly and ends out with a big disemboweling. I'm pretty sure that, and there's this urban legend, I'm pretty sure it's an urban legend, about that story, Guts, by Chuck Palahniuk, and about how every time he reads it, somebody faints or whatever. And I'm pretty sure that's just a little bit of spin that he's allowed to be put out. It's a little bit of hype that he's allowed to be put out about himself. Let's see, what else do we have right here? Rick, I'm traveling on the 26th to Seaside right now. Thanks for the happy thoughts. P.S. I hate you. Well, thank you, sir. Hi, Rick Emerson Radio Program. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Can I say the last thing that anyone needs to say about this story?
Yes, please, and then we're never going to talk about it again.
Okay. On behalf of your audience, I'd like to say...
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now. We're going to take a little break here. Come back. More of Tim Riley ahead, kids. Jan Hammer, take me away. Plus, Transformers notes, like is a 3, Dynamike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Why, hello. The thing about Michael Bay is he looks all strangely Nordic. He does.
He looks very bizarre.
He looks like he ought to have some weird Swedish accent. Like he's that guy in Die Hard. I want blood! And you'll have it. It's 503-733-2970. All right, so we'll do news here. Coming up, we got, let's see. We'll do news. We'll do Transformer. I know people think I'm never going to get to this. I am. There's been no time to do it. So we had Steve Kastenbaum. We had Lisa Goddard and the news. And Jim Roop and the worst story ever that we're never going to repeat, by the way. If you missed the story we read in the last segment, that's it. You're out of luck. Ugh. We're never going to read that story again. It's gone. Gone and done. Finished. So we'll do the news. We'll do some Transformer stuff. And I will get to... It's kind of pointless now because I think it's completely out of date. But we will get to this top five. I didn't want to do it yesterday because Scotty wasn't here. So we'll do that. Don't forget, Scotty. Now, Scotty, do we have further information on Vanilla Ice? Are we any closer to verifying it for tomorrow? Are you still putting it at like a 70%? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 503-733-2970 as we enter this, the next segment of the Ministry of Truth with Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Post intended to protect pedestrians from traffic and...
What? To what?
Post intended to protect pedestrians. That's hard to say.
That's like one of those variety things.
They're trying to protect pedestrians with these posts. They're trying to protect them when traffic in Kaiser. Well, apparently
Kaiser.
These posts are turning heads and leading to complaints. The city spent $18,000 to install 52 cement posts on the sidewalk in a heavily traveled area. However, many residents say the posts bear a striking resemblance to male genitalia.
Oh, I see. Now, I didn't know why we were reading this story. Now it all makes sense.
The group that selected the posts, the Renaissance Advisory Committee, is requesting the city...
The Kaiser Men's Choir.
They want to have metal collars hang around these posts, and then chains would connect the posts, and everyone would be happy. These new additions would cost the city $7,000. How did the rabid fox story get back here again?
It's clever. It's cunning.
I don't know why. Well, it looks like Americans have grown tired of waiting for their internet connections. A survey by the Pew Institute shows 70% of Americans are now using high-speed broadband internet connections. That's an increase of 12% from 2006 and a 40% hike from 2 years ago. Also shows 47% of American adults have opted for broadband, an increase of 5% over last year.
But those aged 65 and over, 15% now have high-speed connections.
Well, I can't fathom. Well, Sarah doesn't. You don't even have the internet at your house.
I don't.
How do you live, woman?
I don't know. It's been kind of nice, but I'm actually starting to get pretty tired of it. I need to figure out.
Now, is it just like a financial thing? Like, you don't want to pay for it?
Well, yeah, I don't want to pay for it. But they hung something on my door that says I'm in a free Wi-Fi area.
You are?
Yeah, so I'm trying to. So I tried to buy a thing to pick up the internet.
I tried to buy a thing to pick up the internet. I tried to buy a thing to sound like an old person.
Rabbit ears.
Where's that device that makes me sound like my grandmother?
I bought this thing, and you plug it into the USB port, and it's supposed to pick up signals, and it never picked up a signal. So I just returned it.
You are
it
so
and,
cute. I tried to buy a thing to get that internet at my house.
Maybe the tubes are full of circuits.
Seriously. Maybe the capacitors need to be rejiggered.
That's the thing with all the buttons and dials.
Now Southeast Portland, and there is I don't give any details. Yeah, but there is, I think we may be welcoming a new advertiser soon to the Rick Emerson Show. It remains to be seen, but I think we might be welcoming a new advertiser. But there is Southeast Portland is actually the first section of Portland to be blanketed by free Wi-Fi. There is a company that we, I think, may be talking about in the future, and they are providing free Wi-Fi to all of Portland, and they actually have started in Southeast.
Well, I just don't understand how I can get something that picks that up, because all I need to...
Need an aerial.
You're standing on the roof, 1950s style, like a, can you get it now? Hold on.
It's a little snowy.
All right, don't, right there, don't move.
I can see Uncle Milky.
That's fantastic. Wonderful.
Stay tuned next for the Jack Parr Show.
Brought to you by Jell-O. All right. Well, you know what? See, as soon as you say that, because it's a geek question and you're a girl, there's like 1,000 guys who will call the show. I know exactly. Well, here's a dumb question. Did you ask the 905 geek guys to do it?
I did. He said that he had some kind of thing, but... It was really expensive, and I didn't have the money at that
secret,
time.
A secret thing.
I said I need to buy one to plug into the USB port, and I did, and it never picked up anything.
You know who you should ask about this is if you're not going to call 1-800-905-GEEK, which you really ought to, 1-800-905-GEEK or 1-800-905-GEEK.com. You know what you really ought to do is you ought to ask, and I know she probably gets tired of these, but you ought to ask Aaron's wife, Jen.
Oh, yeah?
She's like a Jedi. Oh, dude, she's, do you think, no offense, Aaron, do you think Aaron does anything himself on the computer? No, I mean, really, honestly, and he'll be the first to tell you that. I mean, do you think that Aaron, like, he brought in his new iPod yesterday, and he's like, and I've, because you know my, and I'm going to start a whole thing, one of my complaints about the video iPod is that it doesn't do, like, if you want to watch video, it has to be Apple video, like, it has to be, you have to be, basically, you have to buy your video from Steve Jobs. Like, you can't watch just any type of video on it. Except his is all modified. Like, he bought it, and like, 5 minutes later, Jen was at home, like, rewiring it or something, and now it does, like, anything.
Oh, Aaron bought an iPhone?
No, an iPod.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, the point is she hacked it. She's just a genius. You really ought to ask her this question, and she might, I don't know, you can trade her a handbag or something for it. She might be able to hook you up. That's all I'm saying.
High heels.
Oh, cool.
Give her something shiny.
Yeah, because it is kind of starting to suck not having the internet.
I don't even know how you would live not having the internet. I mean, I can't even imagine. It boggles my mind. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
1 billion people will die of tobacco-related diseases this century.
In your face, Scotty.
Unless governments in rich and poor countries alike get serious about preventing smoking. Tobacco is a defective product. It kills half of its customers.
I don't really know that it's defective. I think it works exactly as it's intended to work.
It kills 4 million people per year, and half of those deaths are in developing countries. That's like one jumbo jet going down every hour. With smoking rates in many developing countries on the rise, particularly among the teenagers... The annual death toll will rise to 8.3 million in the next 20 years. By 2050, we can save 200 million lives. I'm not sure if we want to do that.
No, seriously. I mean, I'm with you on that. That really does seem to be sort of a, you know, that's a self-selecting kind of elimination is what that is. That's sort of an opt-in kind of death for the dumb. And are we just selling cigarettes just by the billions to other countries? Isn't that our thing? Mm-hmm. Because you can't really sell cigarettes here anymore. Like, you can't... Do they still have cigarette machines, Sarah? Like a machine where you buy cigarettes? But it's only in bars, I guess.
Yeah, I only see them at bars.
You know, they used to have those. I don't think it's the case anymore. I remember being a kid, and, well, a couple things. A, they would have those cigarette machines, like, everywhere. Like at McDonald's.
You used to have them in radio stations.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Back when I started in the business, yes.
You just put, like, 50 cents in, you do it, and you pull the handle, and, like, a pack of Cools comes out of the box.
It was next to the grand piano in an old orchestra studio.
Really? Is that? Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I, of course, am old enough to remember that my grandmother would send me to the store with a little note, like, you know, please sell my 5-year-old grandson some cigarettes. They're for me. And she'd give me like $2 or whatever it was at the time with a handwritten note. And I would walk down the street and I would buy cigarettes for my grandmother and take them back home. So I don't think you can do that anymore. But it's got to be a tough racket to be pushing tobacco in this country anymore, because you're just such a social pariah. If you like, I saw this. What was I watching the other day? I was watching some crap the other day about cigarettes. It was one of those like how do they make it shows on the Discovery Channel, and it was like a how do they make cigarettes show. And it was John Ratzenberger's Made in America, I think. And they interviewed some tobacco farmers. And I was thinking to myself, that's just got to be the worst way to make a living these days. You have to.
What about the people on the commercials who make Tylenol? First, I thought that was a joke. They're actual people in the commercial making Tylenol.
Those banner ads all over the internet, too. The people, you know. And I mean, look, I'm not saying that this is the case, but has there been some recent resurgence of the Tylenol thing like we had in the 80s?
I don't think so.
Because those Tylenol ads are a little. How do I put this? The ads for Tylenol that are out now are kind of weird.
They like making Tylenol a little bit too much.
Like they're giving something else in a pill before they start working on that assembly line. They're really into making Tylenol, but they
love their work.
The ads that I have seen for Tylenol recently are a lot of Johnson & Johnson Tylenol employees saying things like, I never forget that when I make Tylenol, someone's going to be taking that into their body. It's like a whole lot of, like, I make sure it won't kill you. Has there been some sort of scandal recently with medication being poisonous or bad for you?
I don't know.
Because the ads seem very, it's like...
like they're expecting something.
Well, or like some other competitor.
Like we've outsourced our Tylenol to China.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Who would try to kill us with antifreeze.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. As though there's some other product that they know is about to kill people, and so they're preemptively going, Tylenol, it won't kill you. But it's like what was that health scare? There was a restaurant a couple years ago where they had E. coli around here. Who was that? Or Salmonella? Wasn't there some chain around here that there was a Salmonella outbreak? Anyway,
that was back east.
It doesn't matter.
That was Taco Bell back then.
Doesn't even matter who it was. Sorry. Yeah, but then I was driving along in the past a Subway here, and the Subway, they're big, instead of saying like $1.99 sub day or like 2 for 1, it said, we just passed our health exam, like in big letters. We just passed our health inspection. That was their big marketing ploy.
Honored by dirty dining.
Their food wasn't going to kill you. I don't even know what I'm talking about. But if you're like a tobacco farmer, you must have to lie about what you do for a living now. You can't tell that to a girl.
Well, so it's the liberals who are making all this stuff up about people dying from this stuff.
It's just a bunch of propaganda is what it is.
Those northern Yankees.
All right.
Kind of destroy the economy.
We should move on, because if we keep talking about the smoking thing, I'm going to start going on about the smoking ban thing again, which just continues to occupy a whole lot of my brain right now. So.
Well, let's talk about heat stroke instead. It's appropriate for a day like this because it's so hot out.
Excellent.
A heat stroke can occur when you are in an extremely hot environment for a long period of time. It happens when people overexert themselves on hot days like this. It can happen when temperatures are 95 degrees or higher. Some of the signs include headache, dizziness, nausea, increased heart rate, low blood pressure, elevated temperatures, and profuse sweating. Some of the other symptoms include hot, red, dry skin, high fever, vomiting, confusion, seizures during cooling, and consciousness. So be aware of those. Sometimes a lack of sweating and high body temperature, 105 degrees or even higher. I drink a lot of fluids every hour. Wear loose clothing.
I mean, do people really have to be told this? It's 110.
People in France do.
Totally.
For those listening to us in France.
Was that France where all those people died from the heat a few years
ago?
Like, they didn't know. I mean, it is France, so maybe they weren't familiar with how the shower operates. But it does seem like you just go in there and turn on that cold tap. You know what I mean?
Well, people thought they were being overly French.
they think of their Frenchdom too far. Okay.
Stay in the shade, go indoors, open windows, and use fans, make it even hotter.
I don't think we ought to give tips on how to prevent things like this anymore. I really think that there's a little bit of...
All right, from now on, you're on your own.
There's some more cleansing that needs to happen in this country, really. I mean...
Smoke cigarettes and move to France.
America's new secret weapon, the weather. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What's up?
So, I'm thinking about the whole cigarette thing that we were talking about earlier. Yeah. Maybe it'd be a good idea if they just keep smoking, because personally, I like not paying sales tax on anything. And if all these guys who are smoking say stop, where's all that tax money coming from?
Yeah, but I mean, our taxes, people smoke now and our taxes haven't gotten any lower. I don't know where smoke, where does, is that another thing where they go to the children, Tim? Where do cigarette taxes go?
To the children.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Like lottery stuff?
Yeah.
Like a
Even if it doesn't go there, it's like every time you hear somebody complain about them raising the tax another 60 cents, it's got to be going somewhere, and if it's not coming out of their pocket, it's coming out of ours.
How much does a pack of cigarettes cost now?
Well, ask Scotty.
Sarah?
Like $5.
I think they're like $5.
Really? That's just insane.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, whatever. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, people do a lot of smoking. That is a lot of money generated, but I mean, it's not like... It's not like it's making things any better. It's not like society's really in an upswing because of all that tax money. All right. It's $6 in a bar. Really? Says Scotty. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Well, it's less than the cab ride.
This is Dr. Singh. Tylenol is very, very bad.
No. 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 Wacky voices don't make it onto the air, sir. Try again later. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, what's up?
Presidential candidate John Edwards made all his money by filing a class action suit for children who had unfortunate experiences with pool drains.
Oh, that is true. I do remember reading about that somewhere.
Yeah, he won like $400 million in a class action suit.
Clearly it didn't have the desired effect, though. Since
no, it didn't.
You're not paying close enough attention to those drain covers.
Yeah, but it's, you know, this has been a long time thing, but that's how John Edwards made his fortune.
Well, good for him. Seriously, that does seem like a thing that they could sort of... I mean, you can read ahead in that book a little bit. You know what I mean? Let's see.
Yeah.
We're not covering the drain in the pool. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. There you go. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Michael Jackson is back in the news. He is heading for real estate on Maryland's Eastern Shore as he searches for a vacation home. But nobody cares about Michael Jackson at all. The self-proclaimed King of Pop visited the Royal Peninsula for about 24 hours, but has not made it a purchase. He's 48 years old now, and he's not limiting his search to the Chesapeake region. He has since gone up and down the coast, looking elsewhere for a vacation place. He admits he admires the properties of the East Coast because they have a lot of land. Neverland has 3,000 acres. He likes privacy, but you can't find as many properties like that on the West Coast.
Now, he doesn't own Neverland anymore, right? He had to sell that.
Yeah.
Who bought that?
I don't know.
That's kind of weird that someone owns Neverland, but you don't hear about it anymore.
I guess they don't want it.
You know what's also weird is to think about the fact that he was married to Lisa Marie Presley.
And they said it wouldn't last.
Was he also married to Drew Barrymore?
No.
Who am I thinking of that
Drew
was married
Barrymore
to Drew
Barrymore? Tom Green.
Tom Green. How funny, in my head I've conflated Tom Green and Michael Jackson. But I remember Lisa Marie Presley and Michael Jackson making out on television. What a weird thing. What a weird time we've lived through with Michael Jackson. Don't you find it a little strange? I mean, I know this is a relative statement because we're talking about Michael Jackson, but... Why did she marry him? I mean, it's frustrating and puzzling to me that Lisa Marie Presley has never come out and just, like, answered, like, explained that.
I don't think anybody cares about Lisa Marie Presley.
I don't care about Lisa Marie Presley as
such.
She has
no career.
No, she has no career and no discernible talent. I don't really care about her. And I don't really care about Michael Jackson in the sense of, like, him as an artist anymore. But I am fascinated by things like that. Why did Lisa Marie... Seriously, when I die and go... Have you ever seen that sketch on SNL? It's one of the best skits they ever did. And it wasn't even really funny. It was just a great idea. It was a compelling idea for a sketch. And it was John Larroquette, and he's died, and he's gone to heaven. And God, I think, is Dana Carvey. And the whole sketch is just John Larroquette asking God the answers to all the questions you've always wanted to know. It was sort of like, you know, because like one of the questions that John Larroquette asks God is like, which wins, the immovable object or the irresistible force? It was just a whole sketch about asking God the answers to things you've always wanted. Like, is there a Loch Ness Monster? You know, did that girl at that Taco Bell one time really, was she really hitting on me? One of the questions I'm going to ask God is, why did Lisa Marie Presley marry Michael Jackson? I can't think of any possible reason for that. There's no just, and it drives me crazy. It really, I can't let myself think about it too much, because it's like the answer to the D.B. Cooper thing. It just drives me insane, because I don't know the answer, and I desperately want to know why. I know that makes me a little unstable, that I really desperately want to know why, but it just doesn't make any sense. There's no logical reason on earth why Lisa Marie Presley and Michael Jackson got married. Not like she needs the money. There's no way that she needed the money. They clearly had, like, no sexual compatibility at all. I think we all understand that for many, many, many reasons. And then she got divorced and has never talked about it. She got divorced and it's like it never even happened. It's just so completely bizarre. Well, all right. By the way, Rick, you can get free Wi-Fi with a wireless antenna for in Southeast, but it's dial-up speeds. You're better off getting the same hardware and leeching off your neighbors. I think that's what Bruce Agler does. Rick, St. John's has had free wireless for 2 months now. Signed, St. John's wins again. Yeah, but people are always driving into the front of your house. All right, let's do one more here. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, the motion picture, The Transformers, has smashed another box office record by grossing $29.1
million. What a great segue.
On its really second day of release. The most ever for a 4th of July holiday. Mm-hmm. The Transformers are based on the shape-shifting characters of the popular toy line and cartoon series. It broke the previous Independence Day record held by Spider-Man the 2, which grossed nearly $22 million on July 4th, 2004.
Yeah, but this record is falsely inflated, though, because they opened the movie on Monday. So they had all Monday night, and then they're rejiggering this to make it look bigger than it is.
The film's second-day tally across the United States and Canada also marked the biggest ever Wednesday for a non-sequel movie, exceeding the $26.6 million in ticket sales generated by The Passion of the Christ in 2004.
Yeah. You know what we never talked about with Court and Fatboy? We never really did. I'm assuming. I hope they don't try to retcon this. We never discussed whether we were talking about Canada or whether this is just the continental United States gross. This has just got to be the bet with Court and Fatboy. It's just got to be the domestic continental United States, or the United States anyway. They better not try to work in like Alaska or not Alaska, but Canada and crap into this. All right. So there you go. Well, let's see. So I've got these smoking calls, but I think they'll have to wait. I got to do these Transformers notes.
Oh, yes, your notes, because you saw it yesterday, right?
I did see the Transformers last night. I did see the Transformers last night, so, and I don't want to get anybody in trouble, so I won't say who this is. But there was, but I had said often on the air that I wasn't going to pay for it, that I would see it, but I wouldn't give Michael Bay any money. So there was an employee at a local theater. I was trying to think of, I almost said one of those places where they show movies. There was a guy who worked at a local movie show in place who arranged for me to say I didn't have to pay, basically. So that's, he let me in. He was like, I know you're not going to give any money, so here you go. So a guy was very nice, and I was able to get some like comp employee thing. So thank you, sir. I won't get you in trouble, but thank you. So I saw the Transformers last night, and okay, rather than give you my review like a thumbs up or a thumbs down or the number of, and by the way, let me just say this. Well, I'll save this observation to the end because I don't want to tip my hand. Rather than give you like a regular traditional review of the Transformers, because that would probably be excruciatingly dull, and I don't want to sit and go, I give it a strong thumbs up or down or whatever, because I'm just going to read you the series of notes that I made. I took a little tablet with me.
And wow, you've got some pages there.
Well, they're very small pages.
Okay,
good. And I don't have one of those fancy movie reviewer pens with their light-up tip. You ever seen those? They're, mm-hmm. they're pens with the tip lights up. So these are all badly written because I'm scrawling notes to myself in the dark. I'm surprised I didn't get the guy with the night vision glasses coming in and going, like, taking it away from me. So I just made a series of notes to myself. And I'm just going to read these notes. These are my observations while watching the Transformers motion picture. Let's read these straight through here. And I think we can do this in this segment. All right. These are just my observations and either my opinions. These notes fall into two categories. Either my opinions and sort of my emotional state while I watch the Transformers, or simply me writing down something that has happened in the movie, which I feel is representative of what kind of movie this is. So here we go. I think these first couple are out of order, but we'll just take them as they roll. Note number one. Impossibly hot girl is, wait for it, a genius mechanic with muscle cars, and gives long, detailed explanation about what kind of engine is inside the car. I'll pause between each note. I want to, number them all. Young computer hackers all look like models or Kevin Smith. Several of these computer hackers, and I saw this repeated several times online, by the way, by other posters. Several computer hackers appear to be playing Kevin Smith's character from Live Free or Die Hard, or Jack Black's character from Enemy of the State. Let's see. This is a recurring gimmick in the film, by the way, because the car Bumblebee that said that Shia LaBeouf, is that his name?
Uh-huh.
Shia LaBeouf, who was good in the film, by the way. He's a good actor.
He's awesome.
I bet he can't wait for the day when he doesn't have to play a retard in all of his roles. Let's see. The recurring gimmick is that his car, Bumblebee, communicates with him. The car can't talk because it's, like, damaged or something. So the car communicates with him by playing little fragments of songs or, like, movie dialogue. That's how the car communicates. Yes. So he's all frustrated because the hot girl who's with the jerk athlete isn't paying
it. The hot girl is also smart about the cars.
Yeah, because, okay. She's a criminal. She's from the streets. She's ignoring him and walking home alone from this party where he's at. His car then begins playing at top volume, "Who's Gonna Drive You Home" by The Cars, so she can hear it. Later on, while he's in car with girl, car begins playing Marvin Gaye's "Sexual Healing." Much laughter from audience. Girl gets out of car, begins walking away. Car begins playing "Baby Come Back." Audience finds this hilarious.
Seriously?
Yeah. Guy, I can't remember whether he says this or the girl. I think it's the girl. Girl looks at Shia LaBeouf and says, "You know, there's something about you. There's more than meets the eye to you." Audience may not have gotten this, so they repeat twice more in 10 seconds. "Yes, yes, Shia LaBeouf, there's more to you than meets the eye." Ha ha. Audience gets joke, laughs. Let's see.
Oh, it took me a second.
Yeah, I know. Ethnic guy says, in bad cartoony accent, "My mother, she had the gift. She saw things. I see things, too. I do not think this is over." Let's see. Next thought of mine. Does John Voight need money for something? Why is he in this movie? Let's see here. What else do we have here? Loud, clanky Decepticon robot runs all over Air Force One, making lots of noise and talking. Is noticed by no one. Is not noticed by dozens of security guards. Runs all over airplane seats. Doesn't wake up anybody in the seats. President is a southern guy with a dumb fake accent who says things like, "Wrangle me up some ding-dongs, honey," to the airline stewardess. Let's see. Decepticon robot plants virus on Air Force One using a huge fake operating system that doesn't look anything like any computer anybody ever uses. Same Decepticon is plugged directly into computer with all kinds of cables, but still reads the screen by moving his eyes left to right while looking at the monitor. Next note. This is like watching Ben Affleck in Phantoms. Embarrassingly bad depiction of police in film. Cops should go pistol whip Michael Bay repeatedly. Next. Wacky segment where soldier is under attack while trying to call in an airstrike. He has to go through an Indian phone operator. Who asks him then if he has a prepaid calling card and tries to upsell him. Let's see. Tyrese keeps yelling something about his left ass cheek. That, by the way, is an observation. I saw that reference repeatedly. People are like, what is with Tyrese and his left ass cheek?
I don't understand.
He's, what's his name? Vern on Ain't It Cool was talking about this, too. Where, like, there's some firefight. Where, like, literally, like, a Decepticon is trying to kill everyone. I mean, soldiers dying by the dozens, and Tyrese is getting laughed by yelling something about his left ass cheek. Let's see. Movie has great score. Let's see. This is much less interesting version of Tremors. I miss Michael Gross and Reba McEntire. Dozens of soldiers dying. Death and carnage everywhere. Strangely, no blood to be seen anywhere on screen. Hot girl says, "There's only one hacker in the world who can break this code."
Oh, no.
Yeah. let's see. Fat guys get laugh by playing Dance Dance Revolution. Anthony, what's that guy's name? Anthony Anderson?
Yeah.
The guy from The Shield, he's a comic actor too. He is brilliant computer hacker who also plays Dance Dance Revolution, uses another operating system, doesn't look anything like anybody really uses. Zany shot of Shia LaBeouf riding a little girl's pink bike with a basket and streamers on the handles. And
in a panic to get to somewhere quickly?
And then here's, and this is a fill in the blank for you, Sarah. He crashes the little pink bike. Who do you suppose he crashes right in front of?
Oh, come on. Why are you even asking me that?
Come on.
The hot chick.
Right in front of the hot girl. He crashes.
Did you see her horribly terrible Marilyn Monroe tattoo in that?
No.
She has an enormous picture of Marilyn Monroe's head covering her entire forearm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's all class. Yeah, he crashes the pink bike right in front of her. Let's see, next thought I had while watching Transformers. Boy, Terminator 2 is a great movie. Okay, 4 minutes later I have this thought. Boy, that War of the Worlds remake, that was really great. I wish I could be watching that. Next, Shia LaBeouf makes wisecracks while fighting robot that should be scaring the living hell out of him. That's another thing in this movie. People are fighting for their lives. I mean, and, you know, you could make all, you can say all you want about, well, they're, you know, they're robots and it's based on a kid's, that's fine, but, like, within the context of the movie, things have to have some kind of internal logic. And you can't set up and end the movie with, like, big, tear-jerking, supposed to be horrifying, really serious, gut-wrenching action sequences. I mean, there are moments in the movie that clearly are constructed to either scare you or make you cry. Like, there's a sequence where Bumblebee the Autobot is dragged off, and they're like, he's being tested in the laboratory, and there's, like, all of these really sad, like, violin string section things happening, because they really want you to take the movie seriously at certain moments. But that completely falls apart, because there's all these segments where, like, people are dying all around him, and Shia LaBeouf is fighting a robot, which, imagine if you're just some guy walking around the street, and a huge goddamn robot comes out of the sky and begins killing people. You know, you really ought to be terrified, and yet he's, like, wisecracking the whole time. Let's see. Huh. XM radio plug happens. Let's see. Let's see. Alien spacecraft comes out of sky, transforms into car, blah, 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 blah. Later, they get in the car without hesitation, because that's what we'd all do. Let's see. Movie uses Tarantino music from Kill Bill to try to get good points with audience.
Which music?
It's instrumental? It's that one that has the real heavy drum beat and the, we use it as one of our beds. It's when Go-Go Ruby or whatever that girl's name is doing the mace twirling. You know it if you heard it. Mm-hmm. It samples when the levee breaks. Let's see. Fat kid being chased by killer robot makes Armageddon joke while running.
What was the joke?
He's like, oh, this is cooler than Armageddon! As he's running from robots that are killing everybody in the neighborhood, I believe.
Did Michael Bay make Armageddon?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did, Sarah. Let's see. Are the Transformers only cars because they landed at a car loft? They show all these little miniature things crashing, which I guess are the Transformers crashing to Earth, but they land inside a car dealership, and then later they're all cars. So are they only turning into cars because that's where they landed? So, like, what if they had landed, like, inside of Fry's Electronics? Would they be, like, typewriters or something? It doesn't make any sense. Question. Where does Optimus Prime's trailer go to when he transforms? This has never been explained to me in 34 years. Next note during Transformers. Yes, there is a breakdancing Autobot. Audience finds this hilarious. Let's see. Autobot says to some character, "Are you feeling lucky, punk?" Like Dirty Harry.
Is it in a robot voice, or do they have normal voices or robot voices?
They all have robot voices, except for Bumblebee, who speaks in, like, samples, because his voice is damaged or whatever. Let's see, next. Optimus Prime makes joke about finding something on eBay. Audience laughs. Fat hacker jokes about being a virgin. Let's see, next note. These are all in chronological order throughout the film. Optimus Prime says, sorry, my bad. Audience finds this use of streetwise language to be exciting and funny. Big laugh when dog pees on Transformers' leg. Let's see, what else do we have here? Autobots are massive and shake the ground with every step, yet no one in residential neighborhood looks outside the window to see what the noise is. Next note. I wish to send a DVD of The Iron Giant to every home in America and make them watch it at gunpoint. Let's see here. Let's see. Kooky ongoing joke about Shia LaBeouf being caught masturbating by his mother in the bathroom. Ha ha. Autobots all crouching in front of house in suburban neighborhood. They appear to be 100 feet tall, and they knock everything over, and ground shakes and windows appear to shatter when they walk. No one looks outside of the front door to see what this commotion is about. Autobots remain unnoticed. Let's see. Girl is discovered in Shia LaBeouf's room. Entire scene stolen from Christian Slater's Pump Up the Volume.
Oh.
Let's see. Why is Knish from Rounders in this movie? Does John Turturro owe somebody money? Let's see. Mom, who is a gardener, says, "Get your hands off my bush!" Let's see. See, because they're touching her plant.
Yeah, I
agree. It was hilarious. Sam's dad appears to be played by AM 970 account executive Alan Gabrowski. Let's see. Much laughter when a transformer pees all over John Turturro.
Where does he pee from?
You know, he's got lubricant or whatever, or like automotive fluid. He pees on John Turturro, just like the dog peed on him earlier. Let's see. Agent Ron Butterfield from the West Wing is playing some cloak and dagger guy. He's great. Next note. During Transformers last night, why does Optimus Prime have lips? Why does he need them? His voice comes from a speaker. Why does he have lips? What are they there for? Why does Prime have lips? Let's see. Prime is great, but seems to be in a different movie than everyone else. That's the other thing. Everybody else in the movie makes compulsive jokes. Yet, like Prime, he's kind of cool. Because when he speaks, he has like that great Peter Cullen voice, and he says a lot of things like, they are a young species, but they will learn. They will learn to advance and live peacefully. Were we so different as a young, you know, species on Cybertron or whatever? Which is great, except that everybody else in the movie is doing, like, bad, terrible Michael J. Bad Boys 2 leftover jokes. And then Prime is, like, the serious cool guy. So he appears to be from, like, a different movie. Let's see. Revelation of Autobot that the government has secretly been keeping hidden in secret facility is stolen wholesale from Independence Day. Never thought I would see moment when something is stolen from Independence Day. Revelation that all human technology advances in the 20th century have been made from alien technology is stolen from Terminator 2. Boy, wish I was watching Terminator 2. After Megatron has been unfrozen, where he's been frozen for 50 or 70 years by the government, Megatron's first order of business is to announce, I am Megatron! Maybe to everyone in room. Maybe this is because he no longer looks like Megatron. Anthony Anderson, super hacker, is rewiring a top-secret government computer with a screwdriver. Let's see, next note from the Transformers. I think I just saw a Constructicon. Weird. Next. Optimus Prime appears to be roller skating down a highway. Why am I watching this? Next. The Matrix guys ought to get a bonus every time somebody uses that slowed down bullet time thing. Next. Wonder if an Autobot will selflessly sacrifice himself for a human being. Next. Autobot has selflessly sacrificed himself for a human being. Next note. Do you suppose it's in bad taste to have a jet plane fly through a skyscraper in a city that looks a lot like New York City? Wonder if anyone thought of this. Next. Did I just see a Mountain Dew machine transform into an Autobot? Yes, I did. Let's see. How about this? Sequence of all machines turning into robots appears to be stolen from Ghostbusters scene, plus a little Maximum Overdrive thrown in for good measure. Good guy says of bad guy, that thing's definitely dead now, then walks away, leaves bad guy on the ground unexamined. Next note. Why didn't they just make this an animated film? Why did they bother to make this live action? What is the point of this movie? Next. Optimus Prime ends film by noting that Autobots are remaining, quote, hiding in plain sight all over the world, unknown by human beings. Has he not noticed last 45 minutes where Autobot battles raged in public all over the world? Apparently in downtown New York City and all over highways where they were seen by millions of people. Who did not notice this fight happening? What is going on? And then final, closing credit theme song appears to be done by Linkin Park. Enough said. So there you go. Those are my...
So you were a fan of the movie?
Yes. Well, what do you expect, Sarah? It's just a popcorn film. All right. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. More on the way. Like us at 3, Don and Mike at 7. You said it's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. You stay there. You're much more of a Goonies fanatic than I am, and I love the Goonies and all. I just don't know it as well.
No, it also has that scene where he's tilting the mirror to try and look up her skirt, and she's riding with him, and that's when he clamps down on his hand.
Because this email says, Rick, about that girl bike scene, the riding a girl's is from the Transformers, when Shia LaBeouf, hey, he's a good actor, by the way.
You know what?
Have you ever seen Even Stevens?
No. See, I was going to ask you just now where he's from. No. Like, he just said he came out of nowhere.
Seriously, when I was in college, my senior year, me and all my girlfriends, we'd watch Even Stevens every day. It was just this, silly little Disney show.
Right.
But he was just a phenomenal actor back then, and you could just see the star.
He's a likable guy.
Oh, completely.
He has he does have a real charisma to him. I mean, it just, and again, you know, the movie had there's lots of talent in this movie. Transformers had lots of talent, freaking John Boyd, John Turturro, that's what killed me. And I'll guarantee you that's the thing where John Turturro either has, it's, when you ever see an actor, you see an actor like John Turturro or a guy of that, like whenever Bill Murray decides to do Garfield or something, you always wonder, you're like, you think gambling habit?
Or when Jason Lee decides to do Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, I know! I saw that the other day.
I put that on my blog, I'm so mad.
And it's not even... Okay, I gotta get a hold of myself here. Let me back up here. So John Turturro, who's in Transformers, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure they paid him a lot of money and whatever, but I mean, one of the finest actors of our generation, one of the finest actors of our time, and as somebody once said, he's the finest, getting whizzed on by a robot. There you go. That's it. That's what it takes for that guy to pay the rent, apparently. Just phoning it in, though. Just the very definition of phoning it in. But Shia LaBeouf is actually really good. He's got real charisma to him, and I concur with the guy who emailed in and said that he's probably just waiting for the day when he doesn't have to play a retard.
Mm.
Because I think everything he's played in the movies...
He's had so many good roles. He was in Holes, and he was also in that movie where he was a...
Now, did he play a likable loser?
You know, I never actually saw Holes, and I never saw the other one that he was in. I believe he was in a war movie or... something else where he was, it was talked about his performance was really, really good and powerful, but I don't remember what it was.
He seems like an actor. I mean, I don't really know, but he seems like an actor has a lot of depth to him. I think he'll do big things. And then he plays, here's a question actually for geeks in the house or elsewhere. So Shia LaBeouf is in Indy 4, which, oh man, have you seen that video from Steven Spielberg on the first day of filming at Indiana Jones 4?
No.
Oh, it's so badass.
Oh.
I don't even, there's already guys trying to pick fights with me about the Transformers via email and whatever. You know what? I like it, don't like it, doesn't matter to me. I'm just saying right now my energy, all my anticipation has been channeled into Indiana Jones 4 because I don't really think that anybody seriously expected the Transformers to be good. The thing about Indiana Jones 4, and there's somebody else said this, however much we like to knock on George Lucas, or some of the bad things that Spielberg has lent his name to, there's a shot of its Spielberg and Lucas sitting like side by side. It's like Lucas sitting on a chair, like watching something on a monitor, and Spielberg is like watching over his shoulder. And you think of the amount of creativity and box office potential contained in that snapshot George Lucas sitting in a chair with Steven Spielberg like looking over his shoulder. You think about the amount of just sheer storytelling supernova like energy that is contained right there. But there's a little video going around the net. I should have posted it, but I didn't. I was busy doing a thing. Busy posting a picture of some Chuck Taylor for the Pabst Blue Ribbon Cannon side.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I was just going to say there's this video going around the net of the first day of shooting on Indiana Jones 4. And it's Steven Spielberg doing a toast, and he's got a champagne thing, and he's like, let's do good work, and here's to adventure, or whatever, and I'm just like,
that's so cool.
Seriously, it just makes me giddy just to think about it. So that's going to be badass.
Hey, I was just looking at Shia LaBeouf. Do you know that he was on an episode of Freaks and Geeks?
Really?
He was more likable, yeah.
Playing who?
He was in an episode called We've Got Spirit. He played a person named Herbert.
Interesting. I've only seen that series all the way through once because it's so well done that it's almost painful to watch because it's just horrifying. It's horrifyingly realistic. But do we know whether or not he plays Indiana Jones' kid? It's never been confirmed anywhere.
Aaron knows people who know people. And
knows
I guess
people.
Of course he does. He said that they're a mismatched pair from the beginning. They kind of bump into each other. And you don't know from Shia LaBeouf and Harrison Ford don't know from the beginning that that's his son. But I guess it's something that's discovered.
It is revealed.
Yeah.
Because Seamus was asking me that. Seamus is like, well, he plays a greaser, and there's all this geek speculation that Shia LaBeouf is Indy's kid. But I wonder if that is. So Aaron said. So Aaron got this from like a guy who knows a guy who has like some sort of inside source.
Yeah, Aaron sent me an entire breakdown.
Really? That's hard to believe.
Yeah. Let's see.
long, exhaustive, detailed triaging.
It's filming in New Haven. Looks like it's filming also in New Mexico. The opening scene will take place in Area 51, while they'll have Indiana up against Russian agents. Shia LaBeouf's character is a bit of a greaser. His character and Indiana Jones will be thrown together in an adventure, and we'll find out they're related later in the movie. So the storyline revolves around crystal skulls and pulls from Chariots of the Gods, a book written in 1968. It theorizes the technology, religion, blah, blah, blah. Looks like the upcoming video game will standalone title, not the official game. Okay, so the upcoming video game is Indiana Jones and the Staff of Moses.
But I don't believe that's the name of the film, though.
Yeah,
it
will be a standalone title and not the name of the movie.
Such a dork. By the way, I was a kid, when I was a kid, I read that Crystal Skull book, The Chariots of the Gods.
Oh, the cool
book. Oh, it's badass. I mean, especially when you're a kid and she's all mystical and cool and whatever.
Interesting. So. And Kate Blanchett's the rumored villain.
Oh, is she a Nazi? Tell me she's a Nazi.
I don't know if she's a Nazi.
Oh, can't you see Cate Blanchett totally playing a Nazi with like a riding crop and like a full-on Condoleezza Rice outfit?
Let's think about evil Soviet Cate Blanchett in leather and a riding crop. That's pretty cool.
All right, I'm all giddy about it. All right. Hi, Scotty. How are you doing today?
Doing good.
Should I be taking whatever this call is?
Sure.
All right. Hi, Hello? Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Oh.
Hi, how can I help you?
This is Drunk Norm from yesterday. I'm doing much better.
Lucky me. Hello, how can I help you?
Oh, come on, I'm not that bad.
You sound better today. You sound less drunk. What's up?
Yeah, I think I got a bit of a sunstroke yesterday also. The Lisa Marie and Michael Jackson thing.
Yeah.
You didn't see why there was a reason why they should be married. About a year before they got married,
yeah,
there was a rumor that the Elvis estate was on the verge of bankruptcy. I suspect it was all money.
Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, did she get money from Michael Jackson when they divorced?
I suspect he paid her to marry her, or marry him. I mean, come on, look at the guy. He's a freak.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that you believe Michael Jackson paid Lisa Marie Presley to sort of beard for him for X number, for however long, in an exchange he gave. But that doesn't make any sense, though. The Elvis Presley estate could not be bankrupt. There's no way.
That's what I heard. I heard Graceland was on the verge of bankruptcy. Not bankrupt, but on the verge.
But how is that even possible? I mean, isn't he every year ranked on one of the highest earning performers of, you know, every year, even though he's dead?
Well, maybe they spent all of his money.
Well,
that's hard
true.
To do.
I have a great book called Elvis Incorporated at home, which came out in about 96. When did they get married?
What was it, about 80?
No, it was in the 90s. 90? No, they got married in the late 90s because they were making out on MTV, and I was still watching.
But that's disgusting.
There's a book called Elvis Incorporated, though, which is all about the Elvis Presley estate and how at a certain point it really was bleeding a lot of money until Priscilla Presley, who I guess is just some hard-ass...
She turned it around.
Apparently she's just like a ball buster, too, in terms of business. Apparently she's just hard as nails. And so she's the reason that he makes so much money now because they weren't doing any licensing, they weren't doing anything like that. I guess Priscilla Presley, who... just still hot. I guess she's the one.
Well, there you go.
I like a guy named Drunk Norm has to note that he would do a hot blonde woman. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you.
Hey, I'm not done.
I love it. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Cigarettes.
Yes.
Anybody that pays $5 for a pack of cigarettes is a fool. Plaid Pantry or the 76 gas stations with the store.
Uh huh.
You don't pay more than $3.59.
All right.
And also, one more thing.
For a pack of basics.
Is that your preferred cigarette? I thought you were an American Spirit man.
No, Winston's.
Right.
Also, you know, I know about this this Quickie Mart thing with Matt Groening.
Yes.
He happens to be my cousin. Could you kind of stop busting on him a little bit?
No. I'll stop busting on him when they give us a Quickie Mart instead of giving one to, like, Tulsa, Oklahoma, or whatever the hell.
Well, how
makes
about
no
if I give
sense
my...
at all. You're telling me Matt Groening doesn't have, as they say in Baltimore, the suction to make this happen?
Well,
come
I don't
on
think
now.
He cares.
Well, there you
I
go,
mean,
so F him.
It's marketing.
I mean, seriously.
If you want me to
call
him,
the best
the
you can
then.
Come up with, well, he just doesn't care about Portland, then F him.
Do you want me to call him?
Sure.
Sure.
No, really, I will.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, do it.
And also... One last
thing. No. Hold on. Let's stay in the Matt Groening.
I feel set up for a joke.
So you are saying that Matt Groening is your cousin?
Yes. He's a distant cousin, but he is my cousin.
What, does he know you?
We've never met, but I can get his number.
Let me ask you this. If you called Matt Groening and introduced yourself with your full name, would he know who you are?
Yes.
All right. Okay. So are you going to do that? Call him and ask him. Seriously. I will be respectful because I respect Matt Groening as a creator, as an artist, as the man who gave us The Simpsons and Futurama and so forth, and Life in Hell, which I love. But seriously, you're telling me that Matt Groening doesn't have the pull to get a quickie mart here, or, as you so succinctly put it, just doesn't care.
Well, that's what I suspect.
I just want to hear from him why it didn't happen. That's all.
Okay. It may take me a while. But
all right. Well, you better get cracking.
I will
on
not
it.
Break my promise to you, Rick Emerson, because I respect you more than I respect him.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, sir.
Hey, can I give a free plug?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm breaking.
All right. That's stupid.
I was listening to his plug too. He almost got it.
Yes. Well, there's always tomorrow. Well, we got a break, Scotty. So I'll tell you what. We'll break. We'll come back. Tim will do the news, and then we'll roll this weird top five of yours.
All righty.
I like your unbreakable spirit. All right. Polish never buffs away. All right. Back after this. Tim Riley around the corner. Scotty J's Top 5. Like us at 3. Dynamike at 7. He said it's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. We're going to keep you in the room all the time. I wonder how much gold we miss every day because you're not in the room, Scotty. You just missed Scotty scolding Sarah about her lack of theological knowledge.
I tell you what you need, one of those big TV screens and it's just a face of me moving, you know, so I'm like
a big TV screen. Yeah. I'm sure that'll happen any day now.
I saw Jeff McGinley the other night. I just
really?
Yeah.
Can you come in and put it in our TV?
Yeah, I was going to say, tell him I got some lottery tickets.
He apologized over and over again and said that he really wanted to, but he
had to quit.
He maybe had to leave sooner than he anticipated.
You said that, Scotty. I didn't say that. I'm a team player.
Well, my views are not of those of CBS. My
Scotty, is this good
own.
For the company?
You're not a CBS employee, Scotty?
Well,
I don't remember.
It's 2:35. Check in at 3:01.
Okay.
So Scotty just scolded Sarah during the break because Tim was saying, what did you have some story about the Church of the Nazarenes?
Yes.
And so I said, it's like that whole what's a Nubian thing from Chasing Amy. I said, what's a Nazarene? It sounds like a treat, doesn't it? Doesn't it sound like some sort of Hebrew cracker?
Me, hey, you know? Or no Nazarenes for you.
Seriously.
Hebrew cracker.
No, you know what I mean? Or like a candy of some kind. It's like a kosher candy.
Paul Newman's choice, Nazarenes.
No, seriously. I've got this glass of milk. How about a nice plate of Nazarenes to go with this?
I don't know if it's a thing or an object or a feeling.
I don't know. And so Sarah said, you know, that can be sort of confusing. Because really it is. Because there's so many different slices of the Christian pie. Because, you know, it's like Methodists, Presbyterians, Protestants, Catholics, whatever. And, like Methodists are especially weird. Because, you know, Methodists, they have that bizarre thing. Where they get together every few years and they like vote on what the church's beliefs on certain issues are. It's all very strange. So Sarah said, well, like even for example, Protestants and Catholics. You know, I'm not even really sure of all the, you know, the, and Scotty immediately, there's a big difference,
yeah,
Sarah.
Yeah, well, I said, yeah, because I know that there's the Virgin Mary thing, but I don't know. And then, yeah, Scotty bit my
Scotty
head off.
Scotty, like, chastised her for not knowing the difference between Protestants and Catholics.
Well, it was kind of funny that there's a million different religion sects that you could name, right? And you pick Protestant and then Catholic, and they're like night and day opposite.
Well, let's please do now.
That's the problem.
Please now to illuminate us.
Time to study up on my religion.
Dude, time to study to go home and pour over
your...
Well,
I mean, if you made such a bold statement like that, you obviously know what you're talking about.
Go home and pour over your theological scrolls.
Well, I can tell you this. The Catholics...
The Catholics. it's like my grandmother would go, the blacks.
These priests get into all this trouble with little boys and whatnot, and so I'm not a big believer in the
you don't believe in pedophilia
Catholicism. I mean, time
as most Catholics do.
Switcheroony on the mics there.
So the difference between Protestants and Catholics is the priests being into all the little boys.
Yeah, and that's all I give them. I mean, I do not like the religion just for that.
I don't really believe that was the question.
Okay.
I think the question was, what was the difference, theologically speaking, between Protestants and Catholics?
Theologically, I mean, I really... it's hard to explain the difference, but I know that the Catholics, they drink the wine as Jesus' blood, and they eat bread.
You're bluffing.
So do
you are
friends.
So
they
bluffing,
do
and so do Mormons. You're bluffing.
The Mormons do that?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
See, you know more about Catholics than
things
I do.
And stuff.
But he wasn't yelling at me.
Yeah, seriously, I wasn't lambasting Sarah for not knowing about Protestantism.
Right, but she picked Protestant and Catholics, and the two of them together.
What is
like
something Protestant?
Which is the better religion in your eyes?
Oh, Protestant, for sure.
Because
they don't like little
girls. We're all going to heaven. No, I didn't just say that.
No, seriously, though.
The difference, I don't know.
What is something the Protestants do that Catholics don't?
The Protestant thing is they don't browbeat you in church.
Catholics don't browbeat you, they just beat you.
I mean, you have to go to confession for being a Catholic.
I don't think you do anymore. They closed those places.
Because they were confessing and then the priests were going out and trying what they were confessing to.
That does sound interesting, my child.
I must try
come closer.
Yeah, so I guess, you know what?
There's space in my booth.
I owe you a big apology, Sarah. You know why? Because I'm not prepared to talk about religion today.
You're covering well.
I mean, Rick, you know a lot about Catholic religion, right?
Catholic religion, yes.
Explain to me why it's just not right, in my opinion.
What? I don't understand what you're asking me.
Explain his opinion.
Yeah, I want you to explain my opinion about why I just don't think Catholicism is correct.
What?
Forget it. All right, thank you. This has been brought to you by the Paper Soap Company.
So if you were to recruit Protestants, what would be the selling point of that religion?
That you can be forgiven.
As opposed to other religions where it's not possible. There's no forgiveness. Rabbi, I've said, you are doomed!
Well, I don't know. See, again, I hate getting into religious conversations, but, you know, I think a lot of the Catholics think if you're not Catholic, you're going to hell, just like the some of the other religions think that way as well.
Such as? What other religion thinks that?
So there's no hell for Protestants?
No.
Apparently not.
Do Protestants believe in hell?
Yes. They do.
So people do go to hell?
I'm sure, yes.
Who? What are
Gary Gilmore.
What sins will send you to hell?
Was he a Protestant?
Probably killing and...
Is it? Can you check on that? Is it written down somewhere? Like,
I could...
what will send you to hell?
Yeah. I'm sure it's probably in the Protestant Bible book. Each Bible is written differently, too, by the way. So how do you know who's correct anyways?
The Bible book.
Can we get out of this? Can we just
I don't think that's possible
replay?
To you. When you say the Bible book... Are you referring to the Bible itself, or are you referring to a book about the Bible?
The Bible itself, but here's the problem. Each religion, Mormon, Catholic, Protestant, the Bibles are all different. They're written differently. They say different things. So it's kind of hard to...
What are some of the differences?
No, I'm not getting into this. We're going to end this.
In your estimation, how is the Protestant Bible different from the Catholic Bible, do you believe?
I don't know, Rick. Why don't you tell me? You know more about Catholicism.
I'm not the one listing all of the supposed differences.
I wish we could have kept this behind the green curtain for a while. That way I could have read a little bit
behind
more.
Behind the green curtain, starring Scotty J.
As the Catholic priest.
Maybe we could get some phone calls from some religious
behind
folks.
Behind the green curtain.
And they'll let us know. It's a great topic that we have spawned here. Maybe the phone calls will just come in and save me.
I don't think that's going to happen to you.
No.
All right. You know what we'll save you? Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he's the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
An elderly man drove into a bank in King City and almost exposed the contents of the vault. His lady passenger was due for an injury to her chest area and taken to the hospital. He wasn't hurt. The vault was damaged in the crash, but security officers came and stopped people from stealing money. A poison chocolate milkshake was said to be the closest the CIA ever came to assassinating Fidel Castro. That, according to a Cuban intelligence official who has written a book documenting numerous alleged attempts on Castro's life, he wrote that a mobster placed a poison pill in the hotel freezer in 1963. It was to be placed in Castro's milkshake. However, it froze to the side of the freezer. When the would-be assassin tried to retrieve it, he tore it wide open.
Well, you know, they had that plan. I always heard, maybe it's an urban legend, I always heard they had that plan to give him an exploding cigar.
Poison cigars, grenade attacks at baseball stadiums, car ambushes, nothing worked.
But no, Castro will live forever. Yeah, they also had that plan to make his beard fall out. You remember that?
Yeah.
The CIA was trying to put a special powder in his cigar that would make his beard fall out because then it would diminish his masculinity to the Cuban people. Yeah, Fidel Castro will never die. Man, that guy is just going to be there forever and ever and ever. You can't get rid of him.
As it should be. Villagers in central China have spent decades digging up bones they believe belong to flying dinosaurs and using them for traditional medicine. Turns out, they weren't flying dragons, they belonged to dinosaurs. And now scientists are doing the digging. Until last year, the fossils were sold as dragon bones at 25 cents a pound. The calcium-rich bones were boiled
dragon
with other
bones.
Ingredients. And they were fed to children to treat dizziness and leg cramps.
Who wants a nice cup of dragon bone?
Well, this is in the middle of China.
All right.
What else do they have there? They're busy sending all their food over here. Isn't that true, Scotty? The villagers found out last year that they belonged to dinosaurs, and they donated 440 pounds of these dinosaur bones to researchers. So apparently there were a lot of dinosaurs at one time in China. So that's that. That's one to grow on. That's all I have.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not, that's it.
That means I'm going to have to talk to Scotty again.
Yes, you are.
Yes, perhaps we should get our oil from China.
Or be...
No, what? That's it. Well, they have all the dinosaurs over there. So.
Oh, okay. Or I can be distracted by this hideous new Alvin and the Chipmunks poster. Sarah showed this to me. Is this, said this on your blog?
Yes.
Tim, have you seen the new poster for Alvin and the Chipmunks?
I have not, no.
I'm looking at it right now. When you first told me that Jason Lee, who, of course, rose to fame in Mallrats Chasing Amy, he, of course, plays he's the titular character on My Name is Earl, and he was in Almost Famous, which is his finest role to me. When you said he was in Alvin and the Chipmunks, I was going to give him a pass, because to me, I don't fault anybody for doing animated work. That's, as Joni DeRoshi once said.
Voice work? Yeah,
that's like the easiest money you'll ever make. That's like when Bill Murray... Tim, have you ever done animated voice work?
I have, yes.
Really? For what?
Two cartoons. It was.
You never told us this before. I thought only Jim Roop did animated, voice work.
Back in the 80s, I did two cartoons, two episodes.
Of what cartoon?
It was called The Maplewoods. It was some Japanese import.
Was it with like a character with like huge eyes and like weird sunray Dragon Ball things flying behind him?
And it was like, you know, it would flap its mouth for like 30 seconds, and the translation was like three words, so you had to slow it down and try to fit it in the character's mouth.
The translation was a lot like, "Where's my skateboard?" And then like the mouth continues to move for like 4 seconds.
Uh-huh. It's like, "Try it again, try it again." I only have three words here, so I only did two of them.
Have you ever seen these?
They were in the a channel called the Family Channel.
Oh, man. That. Okay. I'm totally Googling it right now. Meet the Maplewoods?
I think it was the Maplewoods. The name of the Maplewoods was the name of it. They might have changed the name of it afterwards, but it was called the Maplewoods back then.
Meet the Maplewoods. No, Google results. Zero.
It
returns zero results on
now
Google.
You should know that never happens. That only happens to me.
That never happens. You can put in nonsense phrases on Google and get like 9 results.
Yep. It's because my name is attached to it. My results are all... My career is just one big zero.
No, I was wondering if the cartoon was a big hit in the Orient.
It wasn't a big hit anywhere.
Okay. Well, I have nowhere to go with that. I'm
searching. I think you probably knew the answer to that before you put it.
I could already have surmised the, okay, let's see. Hold on now. I'm entering this now in the Internet Movie Database where, I'm sorry. Your search has returned no results. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Well, don't be. I've gotten used to it.
In any event.
I hear more no than I hear yes.
Well, anywho, so I was just going to say that I don't begrudge anybody, Tim, Jim Roop, whoever, doing a voice work. Like when Bill Murray did Garfield and Garfield 2, I would, you know, he probably worked a day and a half on that and probably got $1 million. You know, he'll, Bill Murray, you want to sit in a room in your underwear and read some lines off a page and, you know, whatever, I don't care. But then Sarah showed me the poster for this Alvin and the Chipmunks movie. It's clearly... bad CGI, but then Jason Lee...
And they all are dressed as little gangster chipmunks,
totally.
And they have sunglasses on.
Like, they're all totally dressed, and Jason Lee is clearly, he's Dave, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm assuming, because it's just the three animated chipmunks and his giant face.
And then his big face leaning in here, and the tagline for the Chipmunks movie is, "Here comes trouble!" And you're right, they're all, like, Alvin is wearing a hoodie,
With the hood over his eyes.
Holding over his eyes. The other two are affecting sort of the cross-armed hip-hop lean. They're wearing jogging suits.
They look like Run-DMC in, like, chipmunk form.
They totally look like Run-DMC. That's exactly what it is. So, it's just this... I'm looking at these, I'm looking at the this commentary, and I don't know that I can read... I don't know if I can read any of these observations on the air. But I... Let's see here. And then which I'm looking at these three and aren't, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but wasn't, wasn't Simon like
a
nerd?
Glasses.
Who
yeah,
was, one of them was a nerd, was
Simon,
a geek.
I believe it was Simon.
But now they're all like gangster chipmunks. All right. I can't even, I don't, you know, I don't even have the energy to continue talking about this. This is apparently coming out at Christmas time, so, you know, prepare for the excuse making now about, well, you know, it's just a Christmas popcorn film. All right, there you go. We should take a break here on that callback. It's 503-733-2970. Back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. We return next. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of our show. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com, my friends. I don't even know what he's reviewing tomorrow. I'm completely mystified. Oh, Harry Potter opens tomorrow, doesn't it? Tomorrow?
I thought it was next week.
Maybe it's next week. I don't really know the answer to this.
This whole week is so bizarre. Today keeps feeling like Friday to me.
Yesterday felt like Friday as well. Okay, somebody, I don't want to say it yet because I have to try to track it down. Somebody believes now that they have found the Japanimation program, the anime program in which Tim Riley was a voice actor. Imagine, if you will, people, imagine, if you will, my friends, an anime character that opens its mouth and speaks like Tim Riley.
Oh, that's going to be the greatest thing ever if you can find it.
Oh, I'm going to spend the rest of the night trying to find that. Rick, about Transformers. Riding a girl's bike and being seen by a girl you like scene sounds directly lifted from The Goonies when the older brother is riding down the road after Sean Astin and company had let the air out of his bike tires. Also, I think, like any other Michael Bay film, Transformers will never be a blockbuster type of movie, as it probably has no rewatchability factor to it. It's just a spectacle that people will see once at maximum.
I'm just surprised that you didn't like it after hearing so many people rant and rave about it.
You know, whatever. And it's not like I'm some sort of elitist about my film taste. I mean, you a casual glance through my DVD collection, it will show that, of course, the bar is set very low to amuse me. The movie just had no idea what it wanted to be, in my opinion. It's like they started it off really serious. They closed it on this really serious, ponderous note. There was this moment about three quarters of the way through. They were clearly trying to make you cry with this, like, weird... These weird violin string section music while Bumblebee was being dragged away. But then, like, the rest of the time, it was, like, bad, like, jokes about masturbation and people being whizzed on. And it was just, like, the movie had no concept of what it wanted to be. There was just no consistency to it. And as somebody else pointed out, somebody made this observation about the Transformers, which is, if you compare it to, like, War of the Worlds last year, which I, 2 years ago, whenever it came out, which I really loved.
I really liked it, except for that, like, hour-long scene in the basement.
Well, and except for the happy ending where, like, suddenly everybody was reunited.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was weird.
The thing about War of the Worlds...
You know that kid was dead.
Totally. The thing about War of the Worlds, the last one, and Jurassic Park, is you really believed that these people were seeing something that was just, like, stunning them. Like, you really got the idea that, look, here's people seeing these creatures from outer space, and it's just, like, freaking them out. At no point in the Transformers movie do you ever get the sense that, like, it's anything remotely approaching, like, an actual human reaction or anything. Because that's, like, Michael Bay's weakness. Like, human emotion is not necessarily his strong suit in any way. So, you know, what are you going to do? I don't know. People like it or not. Whatever.
All right, Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, it's Tim Riley. Our PA is Scotty J., a proud Protestant. And the gatekeeper, of course, Dave Zinn. We want to thank Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop, and Steve Kastenbaum. Like us next. Like us 101 today at 5 o'clock. Down on Mike at 7. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't let the bastards rain it down. Thank you for listening. Do try to help the retarded. Watch out for snakes. Bye.